Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Hi, kids.
Woohoo! Where are the fireworks? Come on.
Yeah. Are there supposed to be fireworks now or is it 10 o'clock?
Well, there are fireworks for the win.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
there's
on
that.
The south side. Hee, hee, hee. What a game.
Yeah, this is...
I think it's fun.
Life the way it's supposed to be.
And your plan is, now that they split...
Well, as we were driving in tonight, I said to Johnny, in a perfect world, since the Cubs won last night...
Very well.
Very well. Sox won tonight.
Very,
very well.
Very well.
Tomorrow night goes into 10 innings.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real close game.
Yeah.
I think that would be only fair.
It kind of indicates they're equals,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was a good one, though. It really was.
And I think I know one of the reasons why. Because when you see the picture that will accompany this week's podcast,
yes,
you will see the outfit and the purse that Johnny wore tonight.
My lucky White Sox purse. I know you all want one of those now, don't you? Right? Krista's in here, engineer Krista Flores. You're more of a Cubs fan, right?
Neither.
Neither.
If I was from Chicago, I would have been a White Sox fan.
Okay, so who do you root for?
Well, I'm not into baseball. In the 90s, when baseball was more popular, I was a huge Giants fan. I'm from the West Coast, so we would get all the Giants games
locally. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we know where Ron stands.
Cubs fan.
Yeah.
Not happy.
Come on. You were so
happy
last night.
You had last night.
Yes.
Oh, that was a good game. Let's talk about last night's game.
Let's talk more about tonight's game. That was so ugly. You know what? The Cubs were just walked in. That's how they got their five runs.
Well, they were running the bases so many times last night. I think they got tired today, and that's probably why.
That's it.
That's why they didn't score many runs. I was worried they were going to pull a hamstring. They were on base so often and running so fast.
I know.
So tomorrow they'll be well rested. They work on this
and you are saying this to the woman who treated you to wonderful ribs tonight.
They were very good.
I was afraid that the Sox were going to lose, and I was calling this our celebration meal. And I thought, please don't. After I made 6 pounds of ribs,
they're good.
So you like really fall off the bone, right?
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Kind of crazy.
And this is the ribs recipe that Johnny gave last week, and you can find on our blog.
Right.
And also in the studio. Krista and Bob, who both have been sampling ribs, and Krista?
Two plates, maybe.
Okay.
I didn't tell you guys I went back for five
more.
Okay.
So you were surprised, though, right?
Well, I was talking to Ashley. Like, normally I'm not a huge rib person just because they're messy and,
dry.
And I didn't even have to use my fingers. Like, these literally fell off the
bone. If you lift a bone, the meat's on your plate.
The meat just fell off. And Ashley, she's like, I ate before I came in, and I... regret eating. Those were so good.
I sent out messages this morning, and I said, everybody, dinner's coming in tonight, so bring an empty tummy. Bob,
Bob, what did you think?
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Just wonderful.
Yeah, and smells so good, too.
Yeah.
They were still kind of warm because I took them out, because you only put them in the oven for a couple minutes after you take them out of the crock pot. Hardest part about this meal is getting them out of the crock pot, because you have to use two giant spatulas to lift them to put them over on the
correction.
Cookies.
Hardest part of this meal is not eating while they're cooking, because the smell is so good.
Yes. So, Ashley, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Oh, my gosh. Thumbs up. And I was telling Krista, so I'm also not a huge rib person, but I was like, I'll save some room. I'll try it. Like, we'll eat. And truthfully, if I would have known they were going to be so easy to eat, that's why I don't love ribs. They're so messy, and you have to rip them off the bone.
And
sometimes.
Greasy,
These are the only ribs that I never have to eat with my hand. I have a fork, and it just falls
that's
off the bone, and I'm good.
I mean, it's a game changer. Game changer.
I say we hang a sign up that says Johnny's Rib Joint.
I like it.
You know?
In fact, that's what we should call them, Johnny's Game Changer Ribs.
Hey, there it is. There it is.
Because some of our listeners, in Don Selke out in Arizona, he saw the post. He heard me last Saturday night. Then mm-hmm. he saw the post, and Sunday he made them. And a whole bunch of people that follow him said, I've got to do this, because he had a great picture of them in the crock pot. I said, see, once you do it, you'll never stand at your grill outside watching them, praying that yeah. they turn out okay, or shoving them in your oven and yep. taking them out dry.
Especially with summer coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great recipe to
you
have.
You don't heat up the house.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. The crock pot. It's one of the greatest inventions ever.
Yes.
Yes.
Crock pots and air fryers
yes.
have changed our life.
Now, in all fairness, since I had 6 pounds of ribs, I did use 2 crock pots today. I used my little one for 1 slab yeah. of ribs, and I used the big guy for the 3, because you curl them around standing up on the outside, and then the third slab of ribs gets curled up in the middle, standing up. No liquid in the crock pot, nothing but the sauce on the ribs. That's it. Put that lid on 6 hours later on low, which is how I did it today. Mm-hmm. 4 hours if you need to do it quickly. 4 hours.
4 hours.
That's
yeah.
great.
And the house
you know?
Smells so good.
It does. The basement smells. The yes. garage smelled good.
It goes through all of the vents.
The car and, smells yes. so good. Oh, golly. So I'm glad you guys enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Oh, and French fries, too.
You need to post some pictures of what you took out in the kitchen here.
Oh, they're on our pictures.
Oh, are they?
Our drive to work pictures.
Including ribs.
Yes, they end with pictures of the rib spread. No pictures of the Wrigley building, because I usually catch the Wrigley building as the sun is just setting, and it just looked kind of gray and uninteresting tonight. Ribs look much more exciting in the pictures, so... So you guys can see our pictures on our drive to work tonight. No technical problems tonight. It's me knocking on wood.
Yes. In fact, that was why you heard the entire theme tonight, because we were taking care of a few last-minute technical things, and there were no problems.
No.
Ooh, that makes me so hungry for the ribs.
And you're the guy that said, no, I won't be eating any. Do we have any at home? And I said, yeah.
Well, because I'm being conscious of, I don't want to spill ribs on the console.
You don't want sticky fingers.
And I don't want to share them with the console.
Yes. Yeah.
I grabbed about 15 napkins, I will say.
Yeah.
Just
okay.
to be safe.
Sticky fingers, stones.
Yes, stones.
Right.
That was the album with the zipper.
Right, right. The pants with the zipper.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Ron, one of the things we want to chat with you about is movies.
Okay.
I know you do that on Thursday afternoons on Lisa's show.
Yes.
We're going to take a break and come back. Top Gun. 40 years of Top Gun.
Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was stunned when I realized it was 40 years it's being shown this weekend.
In mm-hmm. fact, this will surprise no one who knows what our grandson Joseph loves. Guess where Joseph was tonight, yes. seeing the 40th anniversary of Top Gun and all the airplanes.
Front row? Front row?
Yeah, we had a need for speed, so they went to IMAX to see it in L.A. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. We got a full show and a whole bunch of stuff coming up tonight on WGN. And I see Mark is checking in from Aurora, and he's listening on his Sea Crane radio mm-hmm. tonight, the one with Bluetooth.
And we also had a text at 312-981-7200. Somebody wants to know, what type of ribs? Well, okay. Well, now, you're getting several demerits because you were obviously not listening last week.
Yes, yes. Actually, I always say use whatever you like or whatever is on sale. In the blog post, you will see pictures of the particular ones that we use. It's a baby back rib. I get them at Mariano's. Frequently, you can get 1 slab, buy one, get one free. Actually, I think their prices are pretty excellent if you compare it to what you would pay in a restaurant, a
and
slab of ribs.
And if you want to see the blog post, go to stephenjohnny.wordpress.com and scroll down. I think it was like about 3 posts down.
Right, right. But the picture will get your attention.
Yes.
You'll know you're in the right place.
Yes.
Yes. Well, we were talking off the air about Top Gun. Krista, Engineer Krista, you've never seen Top Gun. Never been on your radar.
Never seen it.
Yes.
I don't know how I've never seen it, but
crazy?
I haven't.
You the whole Tom Cruise thing didn't
I don't have a problem with Tom Cruise, but he's just never been in a movie that has been like, I saw Mission, I remember the first Mission Impossible
yes.
came out.
Yeah.
I went to the movie theater with my friend. I hated it. He loved it.
Oh.
And I'm like, maybe I'm just not a fan of the type of movies he's in.
It could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And especially now, he just does all of his stunts. And
yeah.
And
yeah.
it's too, I am nervous. I'm watching like this is not fun. I'm having an anxiety attack while you're hanging from the side of a building in Saudi Arabia.
Or leaping off an airplane.
Yes.
Because he really does his own stunts.
Yeah.
And
he's a crazy man.
Yeah. He's not my favorite human, but oh boy, is he a good actor.
Yes, he is. So, Ron, movie man Ron.
Yes.
What are they calling you? Don't you have a little movie nickname?
Movie
guy?
No, not really.
Ron goes to the movies?
No, we really couldn't come up with a name.
It's called
like
Brownie
that,
Points. So. What do you mean?
We do Brownie Points. Yeah, I give out Brownie Points.
He gives
so that's,
that's the whole segment name. Ron.
Yeah.
Ron's
so.
Like, nah. Yeah.
But what about Ronovision?
Ronovision. People will be looking for Ronovision.
We can keep workshopping here.
Yes.
We don't need to
I can see you
were
whelmed on that.
So 40 years of Top Gun, are you going to go back and see it?
I probably won't. I mean, I saw enough, and I liked the second version.
Mm-hmm. Better than the first?
Probably not better than the first, because mm-hmm. it was kind of more of the same. But that was fine. Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. It's a race car movie in the sky, basically, mm-hmm. and that's all that it needs to be. So, Tom Cruise was just 23 years old when he starred in that first one. It was 40 years ago. And I didn't know this. I was looking up some facts about Top Gun. Matthew Modine was supposed to be Maverick, but he turned the role down. So
Matthew
that's why it became.
Modine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read that someplace years ago.
And he was really hot 40 years ago.
Yeah, so he could have been Maverick, and it probably wouldn't have been as big a hit.
Maybe. Where is he today? Is he still alive?
I believe he is. Yeah, but he doesn't do big blockbusters like Tom Cruise loves these big blockbusters.
Mm-hmm.
Even though his next movie is going to be a small film, what's called Digger. Mm-hmm. With Iñárritu, the Spanish director,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to be a small, like, not an independent. It's a big, budget movie. Anytime Tom Cruise is in it, but it's not going to be an action film. So that's going to be interesting. And Iñárritu's won Academy Awards, and his actors have won Academy Awards. One of them was Leo, DiCaprio.
Right.
So Tom Cruise is probably gunning for. Something more than Maverick. He's probably gunning for an Oscar.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a dumb question.
Mm-hmm.
So 40 years since the first Top Gun.
Yeah.
Was it in IMAX then?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
So did they have to do some special process to make it
That's a good question.
Available for IMAX now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Because I'd be curious to see it in IMAX. Those flying scenes, I think, would be incredible.
The first IMAX movie I ever saw, I believe, was the Batman movie we saw over at Navy Pier.
No.
Oh,
the very first one.
Thanks for reminding me.
This was back in the days when it was still called the Museum of Science and Industry.
Yes.
And they had a special showing of, it was some movie about,
the
Grand Canyon or something. So we went to the IMAX theater.
With
in
listeners.
The Museum of Science and Industry.
We were there with about 100 listeners.
And the crazy thing about this, all of the seats are on an angle. So if you can imagine, we're all kind of leaning back, watching because the screen is overhead. The movie's over. Johnny starts to fall up into the Grand Canyon.
I was sick. I had motion sickness.
I mean, that was that's the best IMAX I've ever seen.
And the listeners are chatting, and I'm like, I have to get out of here.
I had to
you had to walk me out of there.
Stabilize you to get you out of the IMAX.
I had no idea.
Here's a quick IMAX fact, because I did just Google, was the first Top Gun shown in IMAX. It was shot entirely with IMAX cameras.
Wow.
It must have been one of the first movies, too.
It was the very first film to be shot with IMAX film cameras, so I'm glad you asked.
Well,
there you go.
That little nugget will get you absolutely nothing tonight.
No more ribs?
Well, in your case, you can have a couple
of ribs. All right,
all right. We're going to take a break. I want to come back and ask you, Ron, I don't want to take up your time, but I'm dying to see a movie that is getting some mileage, at least on my Facebook feed, because I'm a big Paul Rudd fan, Power Ballad with Nick Jonas.
Yeah, that looks really interesting.
And Paul Rudd, I'm like, and there's a soundtrack that's going to be released. But we'll take a break for news. Come right back here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. that just, it wandered into my memory about a week or so ago. That was the Hollywood Flames, and it's called Buzz, Buzz, Buzz. And if you listen to the intro, that, by the way, I have no idea what the cacophony was with the beginning of the intro.
A little foreshadowing, I guess, for the shout-out later, perhaps.
But if you listen to that, that's the Jackson 5 took that, mm-hmm. and they added it to Rockin' Robin.
Oh.
I mean, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. It's that kind of a riff.
But I'm wondering why it slipped into your
jukebox
in your mind.
Because the jukebox in my mind
is very
just spinning all kinds of crazy discs.
Yes, yes,
all the time.
And can I tell a tale on you?
When, at this point, yeah.
When you are playing music in your head.
I know where you're going to go.
His teeth go with the beat of the music, and he doesn't realize that his it's very weird in bed. It's very weird. I'm telling you, because you're going, what's that sound? Is it a woodpecker outside the window? No.
If somebody took just that out of context. Yeah.
We've got a promo.
Yeah. There we go.
You're very weird in bed. That's such a strange.
But that's one of those things that I
bring it to your attention. You're like, no. And I go, yeah, I know the beat of that song based on the.
Because honestly, there is a jukebox in my head. There is always something spinning on it. And half the time, if I'm just trying to fall asleep or something, I'm sort of apparently tapping out a drum beat on my teeth to whatever the song is.
That's it. I told you about Charlie Puth. I fell down a rabbit hole with Charlie Puth. I think he's just a fascinating musician. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's so brilliant. And he's been working with Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald.
Yeah.
And he was being interviewed about that whole process. And he said he hears music all the time.
Oh, yeah. This is a crazy story. This isn't just like I always have something that is playing on the jukebox in my head. This is...
When he's looking at people, songs are playing. When they speak, he hears it with music. And I thought, that would be a curse.
It's a little bit like, only a whole lot different. We've talked before about the fact that my brother and a lot of people have something called synesthesia. Which means, for example, if you said or wrote the word orange, he might see that word as purple.
Right.
He literally sees words in different colors.
And he gets a little bothered by, like, a billboard when the colors don't match the colors that he's seeing the words as, or advertising, a packaging.
Yeah.
It doesn't match what he sees the words are, which I find fascinating. And didn't Stevie Wonder say, even though he's sightless, he had synesthesia?
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that manifested.
I don't understand how that works either.
You're not seeing things. Maybe he's hearing colors?
But apparently there are literally thousands of people all over the world that have synesthesia.
Synesthesia.
But what Charlie Puth is dealing with, that's a whole different... I would wonder if you are playing a song to Charlie Puth, mm-hmm. is he going to really hear that song, or is that song going to translate to something else?
He was asked that question.
In his mind?
Yeah, he has to adjust his thinking. He has perfect pitch, and there's another form of perfect pitch.
There is absolute perfect pitch. And
I've
known people that have had absolute perfect pitch, and it literally gives them migraines, because mm-hmm. if you open a door and the door squeaks and it's a B flat, but it's like mm-hmm. a quarter tone off, mm-hmm. it will give him a headache.
Hmm. I kind of like my boring life. I just hear you speak. I don't chomp my teeth. I turn on music. I don't hear it playing in my head. I'm okay with this. I really am. Okay, Ron's got to get back to news. I'm just curious. Speaking of music, have you heard anything about Power Ballad?
Just what I've seen, you know, as far as the trailer and things like that. It looks very interesting, and it's getting great reviews, so I'm looking forward to it.
Open at a festival, I think, over in Europe someplace?
The Dublin International Film Festival,
And it got a good buzz on that. And when you read the synopsis, it sounds like, oh, it's been done before. A wedding singer meets a washed-up former boy band singer. That's where we get Nick Jonas. And at a wedding one night, they bond over a jam session. One of the trailers I saw, the bride walks up to the band and asks them to play a song that apparently they'd recorded, but they don't play it live because it's not going to sound like it does on the record.
Because the singer says, I can't replicate that live.
It's my wedding. You have to play my song. I can't do that. And next thing you know, the drummer and the guitarist start playing the song, and he turns on them, and they just start fighting. And they're like in the floor.
And that never happens on stage.
No, it never happens on or at weddings.
Or at weddings.
No.
Movies. Quick quiz for you. Here we are in May. The number one movie for this year. What do you guys think is now the number one box office for the year 2026?
Devil Wears Prada.
No, I thought it was Project Hail Mary.
I think isn't it? What was that kids movie?
Very good.
Yeah.
You're on to it.
Hoppers, was that it? Or
Super Mario.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's what
Super
I would
Super Mario is number one for the year 2026, followed by Project Hail Mary.
Mm.
Devil, when did that come out?
Project Hail Mary?
No. Super Mario. Didn't that... Was that this year?
That's what I thought.
It feels like that's been out for... 5-10 years.
It's not like the first Super Mario Brothers movie.
This is the galaxy version of Super Mario. And this weekend, along with 40 Years of Top Gun, apparently Devil Wears Prada 2 fell from number one last week, fell down to number three because Obsession. Have you seen Obsession, Ron?
I've just heard about it, and you know, so I know the plot points and. I may see it just to review it, but it's not a movie that I ordinarily would go see.
Is it a scary movie?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You know what movie I did see? Can I just plug this one movie real quick?
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Christophers.
Hmm.
And it stars Sir Ian McKellen.
Oh.
And it's a Steven Soderbergh movie. And it's just very smart. And it's very funny, and it's very moving. It checks all the boxes.
Hmm.
And it's about an artist. Ian McKellen plays an artist, an aging artist. He's on death's doorstep, basically. Hmm. And so the children hire a forger to forge his earlier work that he never finished, so there will be more artwork to sell after he dies.
Hmm.
And it doesn't exactly turn out like that. So,
Is there a wide release on Christopher?
I don't know. It was out like a month ago, so I think it's on home video now.
Mm.
Or, you know, you can watch it on streaming services. Mm-hmm. I should say. But it was just so moving. I was just so taken and drawn in with it from the very beginning.
Okay,
so Ian McKellen is always wonderful.
Yes,
I wanted to give him the Oscar right there. I think it's May.
Wow,
it's May, but. He's just great.
And then, of course, let's not forget The Sheep Detectives. On paper...
That is getting such good reviews.
I know. Mm-hmm. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus was on with Colbert the other night.
Yeah.
Yes. And he said, so how did you feel when they presented you with... And she said, it's not my thing. She read the script and said, sign me up. I want to be in this movie. And, of course, it's her voice of one of the sheep. And Hugh Jackman, and it just looks so adorable. And it's in the top five this weekend.
Good. Yeah, I need to see that one, too. Because you remember Babe the Pig, right?
Oh, yes.
Love that movie.
That was just just beautiful and so funny.
In fact, one of our dear friends, Russie Taylor, she was, for many years, she was the voice of Minnie Mouse.
Mm.
But she was also the voice
of the cat. In Babe.
The sexy cat.
And she told great stories of working with that cast. And again, on paper, it looked like a stupid movie. But, it spoke to young and old.
That's a wonderful movie.
It really
We may have to rewatch that.
Yeah.
It made me believe that pigs could talk.
I know.
That's how good it was.
And it must have made Lisa Dent believe, because she owns a pig.
Yes, I'm sure it's one of her favorites.
Oh, that pig is, it's big.
Yes, it is.
Ooh.
And it's losing its vision, I guess.
No.
Yeah, she was telling a story about that the other day.
Oh, is she going to get glasses?
I don't. She'll do anything for that pig, so I wouldn't put it past her.
Oh, bless its heart.
Yeah.
How do you know if a pig is losing its vision?
But they're bumping into things.
Oh, no.
So, and when a pig bumps into things, you know it.
Yeah.
When it knocks you off your feet because it's trying to get close to you to snuggle, you know it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
By the way, before we break, just speaking of animation and games and things like that, one of the coolest things that was just announced this past week, it is some anniversary for Pac-Man. So Fender Guitars has come out with a Pac-Man Fender Telecaster guitar. It is so cool looking.
You're not getting one. No.
It is so cool looking.
No.
I mean, it has all of the imagery of Pac-Man.
And it goes chomp, 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 chomp.
And I saw this one video where the guy is getting into minute detail of some of the dates on the guitar, and one of the dates is the date that Pac-Man started, the other is the date that Fender Guitar started, and then you add them together, and it's just...
Ooh, it's all Ouija.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Gosh, I worked at a bar at the Holiday Inn on Lakeshore Drive, and we had two Pac-Man tables.
Mm-hmm.
It was the best moneymaker in the world, because people would stand around watching two people playing Pac-Man.
Yeah.
I'm next. And, of course, they're drinking beer while they're doing that.
What was the restaurant we used to go to up in Evanston? Yesterday's.
Yesterday's, yes.
And we used to go there. We would play Pac-Man while we were waiting to...
And those were stand-up Pac-Man.
Yeah.
And at the bar at Holiday Inn, they were table sit-down, and you had an area around the game where you could sit your drink. And I was like, yes! I love these money-making machines.
And the first time I ever became aware of Pac-Man was back when we were both at WIND.
And
our producer, Cheryl Morton, she would play Pac-Man down in the restaurant.
The Brasserie.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Down in the basement on Michigan Avenue.
She was good at it, too.
Yeah. Okay. Ron, put your news hat back on.
Oh, okay. I can do that. And when are you buying that guitar then, Steve?
No, stop it. Hey.
Send me a picture when you buy it.
It's a limited edition.
Oh, there you go.
That's right. Ron has guitars. We've never talked to him about your collection. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I have about eight or nine. They're not all mine. I'm babysitting several of them. I have three.
That's a good excuse.
Yeah.
Yes.
They needed a home. I volunteered.
Yeah.
I'm that kind of guy.
Don't try that, Steve.
It's a selfless act.
I'm on to you.
Run.
Yes. But back to movies. Ron talks about movies on Thursday afternoons in the 3 o'clock hour with Lisa.
It switches around, but it's 3:30, sometimes 4.
Okay.
I award brownie points, a little play on my name, instead of, stars or thumbs up or anything like that. And I really enjoy it.
I just got it.
Brownie points? You see, my name is Ron Brown. And brownie points you give to somebody if they do something good.
Ron,
so.
Ron, I've said it before.
Stop it.
I married a sitcom.
Hey. Be nice.
Well, we do have fun with it, and I have fun reviewing movies. And what was it last week? It was the three documentaries, and one of them I know you guys would love. It was the only one of the three that I loved. Marty Short, the Life is Short. Life is Short.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm curious about that.
That's
from
powerful.
Beginning until the end. Yes, it's moving, and it's also funny. And you realize, he's had a career for a long time, and he's had some movies that were just terrible. And he admits it, and he laughs about it, and he doesn't shy away from it. But it's
the personal loss.
The
in his
personal
life.
Loss is what he talks about,
it's
and
stunning.
how he can talk about that, and say that this is life goes on, and you have to choose how you're going to let it affect you.
Yeah.
It's very philosophical, and he just seems like the most genuine, nicest guy. You want to be his friend,
isn't he? Meryl Streep's main squeeze now.
I don't think so, no.
I think you're confusing it with, who was...
But
on the TV show, but... Murders in the only Murders in the Building?
I know.
Well, you may be hearing the gossip that I'm not hearing.
the cheap gossip.
We could start it right here, that's for sure.
Right, yes. They make quite a team.
We saw it on the internet, so it must be true.
Yeah, you're right. Yes, yeah. Yes.
But yeah, he's just a lovable guy.
Yeah.
He just seems so real and genuine, and the way that people talk about him, it's not, they're not even talk about him like he's a star. Mm-hmm. They just talk about him like he's a really good guy, and you believe him, and I believe after watching this. I've liked Martin Short, you know, like the Jiminy Glick, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
They're just incredible. You know, the Grimley, the Ed Grimley. Mm-hmm. It's just so creative, and it's so just his own. And I like the series, Only Murders in the Building. A lot mm-hmm. of it is because of him, because he's just so out there.
Yeah.
And it's a really good documentary.
Okay, so that's Marty.
Life is Short.
Life is Short.
Mm. Yeah, and it's on Netflix, I believe.
A play on his name. It is. I got that one.
It is.
Martin Short makes me think of Saturday Night Live, and isn't tonight their last...
It is.
And Paul McCartney is supposed mm-hmm. to be on, and I'm going to predict Ringo Starr is going to be there with him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because of the album, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because of the first song that they've recorded together.
Yeah.
Ever.
Or singing
yes.
together.
Yes. But people are supposed to listen
because
to our show.
Because rumor has it they recorded a few songs together before.
Record Saturday Night Live because you want to stick around with us.
Yes.
Because we've got a full show and a whole bunch of stuff coming up. So stay with us right here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That is Neil Diamond, mm-hmm. and that is from his brand new album, Wild at Heart.
When did he record that?
This is the third and final album from his Rick Rubin collaboration.
Really? I thought he was having a problem with his voice.
He is. These were previously unreleased tracks that he had recorded with Rick Rubin years ago.
Wow.
He did two previous albums. This will be the last of the albums, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the final chapter in his Rick Rubin collaboration. And it
kinda
is
kind of like Johnny Cash and his final
exactly.
with Rick Rubin.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And
I've talk
listened to
Rick
some
Rubin.
Of the stuff, and it's really good stuff.
Yeah. Let's track down Rick Rubin, because he's probably got great stories to tell.
Oh, he does.
Because he works magic with these people.
He
I
does.
I mean, the Johnny Cash.
Well, and he lets them be themselves.
Yeah.
You won't find a lot of orchestrations mm-hmm. in this. I've listened to a couple of the cuts, and I want to get the album. It's really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a Neil Diamond fan. And as you said, he's had some very serious mm-hmm. health problems. But he was excited about this, and you can go to his website, neildiamond.com, and you can find all the information about it, and the album is out now.
I'll have to see if it makes me sad while I'm listening to it. Because knowing that that's something he can't do now.
Yeah.
But it's better than having no Neil
Although,
Diamond.
Although, who was it that we said that we saw recently on TV who said he spent some time at Neil Diamond's house and they wound up singing, and any time they were having dinner.
Was it Hugh Jackman?
Yeah, it was Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Who kind of talked himself into dinner at Neil mm-hmm. Diamond's house, and any time somebody says that line from, I'm blacking out at a brain fade. Where the whole crowd says the chorus.
Sweet Caroline.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Da, da, da. Like everybody at the dinner
Sweet
table
Caroline.
Is doing that. Yeah.
What do we shout? I've just drawn a blank. I can see a whole...
Da, 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 da. So good. So,
so good,
good.
So good. Good. Thank you.
So apparently while they're having dinner
My brain was
at Neil
exploding.
Diamond's house, anytime anybody would say...
So good.
So good. The whole table would go, so, so good, good, so good, so good.
That's nice.
Sometimes I accidentally say salt because the Margaritaville song.
Yes.
Yeah.
Salt.
Yep. Have you ever been to one of the Margaritaville restaurants?
Oh, yeah.
And
where the plane comes down from the ceiling.
And then the salt shaker drops on your table. Speaking of food... The month of May is Celiac Awareness Month. Next hour, we're going to do our segment, and this time around, we're going to talk about the only all-gluten-free hotel in the country.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the man who owns and operates that all-gluten-free hotel in Louisiana coming up after 10.
Right after the news. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio with the world's first gluten-free radio show, and we have been a gluten-free radio show since I was diagnosed with celiac disease back in 2001.
So 25 years we've been a gluten-free family. Before, being gluten-free was cool. And this is Celiac Awareness Month, the month of May, and I'm happy we've got five Saturdays. So every Saturday we're spending a few minutes talking about some of the wonderful things happening in the gluten-free community. And if you're new to the discussion, celiac is an autoimmune condition that it is very likely is genetic.
And it impacts different people different ways.
Yes.
For example, when I was diagnosed, I was losing 12 pounds a week. They thought I had cancer. I got lucky, got a European doctor. He recognized the signs. He said, have you ever been tested for celiac sprue? I said, I never heard of it. They ran the test, came back positive, changed my diet, changed my life.
But a celiac person eating wheat, rye, barley, and some oats can find that they are very, very sick because their immune system attacks their small intestine, and they feel lousy, and they can go on for a long time. But let's talk about the good stuff. There is a hotel in the United States that is 100% gluten-free.
And one of the things that we were surprised to find as we were doing a little bit of research, apparently over in Europe, you will find tons of gluten-free hotels. This hotel we're going to talk about tonight is the one
yes.
hotel in the United States that is completely gluten-free.
And the owner and operator joins us now. He is the owner and operator of Hotel Monroe in Louisiana. Michael Eccles joins us. Michael, good evening, and thanks for joining us on WGN.
You know, it's an honor and pleasure to be with y'all tonight.
Well, golly, let's start talking a little bit about where you are. Where is Monroe in relationship to Shreveport?
All right, so we're an hour and a half just to the east of Shreveport, but Monroe is the birthplace of Delta Airlines, one of the first places to bottle Coca-Cola. Oh. And for most people in this century, it's right around the world of Duck Dynasty.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
Oh, wow. And your hotel is, from looking at it, I suspect it's an older building.
It is. So it's two old buildings side by side. One was an old hardware store built in the 1915, 1920. The other building, built in 1891, called the Sugar Brother Opera House, a beautiful three-story building that was an opera house and a grocery store.
Wow, in Monroe. That was a happening place then, huh?
You know, Monroe's gone through a lot of ups and downs over the last 300 years, but it was a trading post. Then the 1950s, the largest gas field in the world. And then from there, it's had starts and stops, but center of commerce for a lot of things.
Wow.
And for those of you who want to kind of follow along as we're talking, you can go to hotelmonroe.com, and you can see some information and some wonderful pictures. I have to ask you, the first gluten-free hotel in the United States, why? What made you decide to do this?
So, you know, our family, we figured out about 15, 16 years ago that we had celiac disease all spread throughout our family. Once we got off of it, our lives changed. And fast forward, our brother and sister-in-law have a great bakery called Butter Bakery, and it's completely gluten-free. And then for about 5 to 7 years, my wife and I worked on, you know, if we're going to develop a cool boutique hotel, what do we want to set it apart from other things? And as we did our research, we realized there's no other full-service hotel in America that was gluten-free. So we said, you know, we got to have a place to, one, eat, but two, we want our guests that come to this community to feel safe when they come to the community. So we just did it, and it has been a labor of love, but we've been operating for about a year now, and it's been very successful.
Now, I'm sure if people listening are saying, well, I go to name the restaurant, name the hotel, and they have gluten-free food on their menu. This is totally different, though, right, Michael? There's no gluten in your building.
So in our kitchens, they're completely certified and gluten-free. We have three different kitchens. We have Star Bar, which is a rooftop bar and a completely gluten-free kitchen there. We have our main heirloom restaurant, kitchen's gluten-free there as well. And then on the third floor, we have our ballroom and opera house, which is where most of the events take place. Again, another certified kitchen. We think that it's very important that all of those are certified, all of those are completely gluten-free, and we have protocols in place to protect those areas with ruthless abandon.
That's amazing.
For people who want to take a look, this is a gorgeous
place. Hotel.
This is one of the most beautiful hotels I've ever seen. But we're going to be we're going to be there at some point.
Because I think I was telling somebody from your office that when we drive to Panama City Beach, we could just take a right-hand turn and swing by Monroe, Louisiana, just to check your place out, because this is really exciting. And I know, Michael, you did research. You know, you can go to Italy and you can go to completely gluten-free hotels. You can go to Ireland, same thing. And thank goodness we've got one now in the U.S.
What made you decide to do not just a gluten-free hotel, but a boutique gluten-free hotel?
So we've been investors in historic properties for almost 20 years now. And so this one property we bought in 2014, my wife's an architect, and of course, you know, we've all been very involved in historic preservation and restoration. And it just became the logical next step on, you know, trying to preserve a cool property, but then coupled with some of our dietary challenges that we face for over a decade now, that we could pair these two things together. We have other properties we're developing right now. We have just 30 minutes down the road, two other restaurants that are in development. One will be online in about 60 days. It'll be a hamburger joint. The next one will be a very high-end dining facility. So we're trying to build a whole ecosystem of these gluten-free facilities that I think will lend to high quality, terrific food with a southern flair, but creating something special so people have a safe place to go and eat, drink, and be merry.
Has it been difficult training staff? Because I'm sure there are people that are like, what? I'm not a glutton, because sometimes that word gets used instead of gluten. No, that's a totally different thing. That's biblical. So has it been difficult, you know, starting from square one with some folks that just don't even know what it is?
It is really hard. You know, when you start educating people to understand that it's a disease state for many people and that it can harm their lives and their ability to function for days at a time, if not longer. Mm-hmm. So that's been a real learning curve for a lot of individuals. But for us, it's been, you know, more of it's a passion project, because, you know, our homes are gluten-free, our families, we keep them as gluten-free, you know, as an ecosystem as possible. It's tough when you have kids that go to school and everywhere else and, you know, things that come back into your home. So it's just a hard thing to facilitate, but we are relentless at our hotel. That's why we have the certifications, and we want everybody that visits us to know that it's a safe place. They can come, be comfortable. We know when you're in this world, it's such a tough thing to navigate, but we're very, very strict. Our kitchens are absolutely perfection. We walk them, we talk them, we make sure that they're right where they got to be every day. I just walked our kitchens tonight, and we're very serious about this, and we want people to know that it's a safe place to eat and enjoy life.
Yeah, exactly. And relax, to be able to relax. That's so, so important.
I'm pretty sure I know what the reaction has been from the gluten-free community, but I'm curious, what has the reaction been from people who are not gluten-free but are just looking for a good hotel? Are they afraid that the food that they get there might not taste good?
So intentionally, when we opened the hotel and we led into this effort, we didn't tell anybody. We just let them come to the hotel and eat and drink and enjoy their life just as they would otherwise. Now, as we've gone further into this to tell the rest of the world about it, it's been quite a surprise. But I think if you taste the food today, it has a real unique southern cuisine, you know, from your fried green tomatoes to the ossobuco, the steaks, the fillets, but then all these other southern treats. I love quail, and so we have these beautiful fried quail wings that with this delicious spicy honey that goes on top of them. I mean, there's so many things that we have that are just unique southern treats that set us apart from others in the market and even in the South, that I think that no matter whether you're gluten-free or not, you're not going to know it's that good.
How about catfish? You got to tell me you're doing catfish.
Catfish and chafalaya. That is one of our favorites on the menu. This beautiful Creole sauce with crawfish. We have several catfish dishes, though, not just that. I mean, if you want your traditional fried catfish, fried shrimp, we've got that, too. Mm-hmm. But we've got several items on the menu that are very, very special.
Mm-mm-mm. Michael?
At some point, we have to share the recipe for the gluten-free barbecue ribs that Johnny made and brought into the station tonight. You would love them.
Because every Saturday night in the month of May, I'm sharing a recipe. And my goal is to put out my book of country comfort food, proving that you can make Southern food gluten-free. And, duh, it's good. Sometimes it's even better than the stuff that has the nasty old gluten in it. Michael, we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk a little bit more about the only 100% gluten-free hotel in the United States. It is Hotel Monroe in Monroe, Louisiana. More coming up on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We are talking with Michael Eccles. He is the co-owner of the Hotel Monroe, which is the first gluten-free hotel in the U.S.
100% gluten-free. Last week, we had Chris Rich on from the National Association of Celiac. And I remember he said, gluten is like glitter. It's little and it gets everywhere. So if you want to be gluten-free, you have to be diligent. And that's what they've done at Hotel Monroe. And Michael, a listener, Jeannie wants to know, looking at pictures of your hotel, can you accommodate a wedding with a completely gluten-free reception?
Absolutely. In fact, tonight, the Montgomery family was celebrating a wedding in the ballroom this evening. And so our five-star catering operation can facilitate any type of wedding or wedding venue. We are very, very careful, not only, I mean, from the time you walk in the door to the time your catered event goes off without a hitch. But yes, absolutely, we can do that.
Now, the blatant plug light just went off. So for people who would like to check out your hotel, what is the address? Do they email you? Do they call you? How do people get in touch with you?
So if they go to hotelmonroe.com, that's the easiest way to see our what we've got. But, of course, we're at 120 Walnut Street in Monroe, Louisiana. We're a boutique hotel. We're Hilton Tapestry. So if you're looking for a branded hotel, it's a Hilton. So we'd love to have people come and visit no matter where you are.
That's really amazing. I can't thank you enough for taking the leap. A year into the mission, are you surprised at the reaction you're getting?
You know, the last 60 days has been pretty phenomenal. You know, as you start these things, starting a business like this is hard enough. But when you started gluten-free, which is a very small segment of the market, that's why we didn't tell anybody when we started. But we know that you can have Southern delicious food as gluten-free as we've got it, you know, just it's going to be spectacular. I promise you the experience is great. And the hotel rooms are second to none. It'll feel like you're staying at a five-star hotel. No matter where you've traveled, you'll feel like you're at home.
I just clicked on a picture of an amazing waffle. I just wish there were scratch and sniff on my computer screen.
Yeah, you got to work on that,
the
Michael.
Chicken and waffles, five-star.
Oh, my gosh. And so, again, fried green tomatoes and catfish and etouffee and shrimp and all those good foods that you think of when you think of Southern food, you have been able to, and people look at me and say, oh, you can't do that. But you've been able to successfully transition those foods so that they are completely 100% gluten-free. That's so exciting.
Well, I'm a Southern boy, and I don't miss many meals, and I've been gluten-free for 15 years. So let me tell you, we can still get it done down here, down south.
Well, again, congratulations. Can we get back together again when you open up the hamburger place as well as the fine dining restaurant? Because that Monroe is going to be the place to be if you're heading south, right?
Well, if you're celiac or just staying off gluten, we're going to be able to feed you and house you. So come and see us down here in Louisiana. We'd love to take care of you.
Now, if people want to come down for the summer, are there dates that are kind of booked up, or how far in advance should people try to get in touch with you?
So right now, if you're trying to come in on a Monday through Friday, it's almost impossible. We're booked up. But weekends, depending on whether there's events or weddings going on in town, Best case, just go to hotelmonroe.com. You can see what bookings are available, but it's really, really tight right now, but we'll figure it out a way.
And how many rooms in your hotel, Michael?
So we've only got about 70 rooms in the hotel,
wow.
But we have two other hotels in our development pipeline right now, and we're trying to put up another 100 rooms over the next 12 to 24 months, so we'll be able to accommodate. They'll all be gluten-free.
Well, I'm glad we could make you sit down for 15 minutes and rest. Thank you so much for your time, and thanks to you and Christy for taking the leap and making this place available to just everybody who wants fine dining, but everybody who cannot relax when they go out to eat because they happen to be celiac and they're on a gluten-free diet. Now they can do that. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks a bunch, Michael.
Honor to be with you.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
I'm serious.
I
want to go there.
I know. And we were talking to Ashley. She's looking at pictures. She's going, yeah, I'm not gluten-free, but I'd go.
And if you look at the pictures, I mean, it is a...
I
should have asked him if they have a historic designation because it's just a gorgeous looking hotel.
And don't you just love the attitude of, we're just going to make a whole community here where people can come and just feel relaxed. And
I love that he's done what you have done several times when we've had people over for dinner. Johnny hasn't told them that it was gluten-free.
Right.
So they would just come in and they would ask for seconds. And then after the fact, you've been eating a gluten-free meal.
Well, how about friends that have come to stay with us and not realize, I'm thinking of our buddy Gail from Florida, came to stay with us because she was having surgery at the Rush. And for 2 weeks, she ate gluten-free, and she said, I never felt better.
Yeah.
Because that's all she was eating. And she had rheumatoid arthritis, and we have heard from many fine rheumatologists that, in fact, gluten can be the number one aggravator for anyone with any form of arthritis.
Yep. And a doctor told you if you hadn't been gluten-free, you wouldn't be able to get out of bed.
Yep. And she said after staying with us, she said, wow, I'm a walking testimonial now.
Now, the full disclosure, a gluten-free diet is not for everyone. So, talk to your doctor, do what's right for you. But for someone who has been diagnosed, absolutely, don't cheat.
Right. Coming up, because this is part of the segment we're doing, I have a recipe I'm going to share with you all. Then that recipe will be available for you on our blog and on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And this week, last week we did ribs. This week we're going to do Sunday brunch. So I'm going to give you a recipe.
This is so good.
You can get ready for tomorrow morning's brunch. But news is next here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Gluten-free rock and roll. Yes.
Everybody's jumping on the bandwagon. Our thanks again to Michael Eccles. Gosh, that is such a huge undertaking to decide to take an establishment and make it 100% gluten-free.
Yeah.
And it's working.
Yeah.
So I can imagine they've got to do this in L.A. They've got to do this in San Francisco, New York. Come on.
I'm amazed that this is the
first
time a hotel has done this in this country. And it's so common everywhere else in the world.
Yep. Well, a couple of questions came in before I get to our brunch gluten-free menu, and I have posted the recipe on our Facebook page. It will take you to our blog, and you'll see pictures, and I promise you, you're going to get hungry because you looked at the post and
I'm so hungry for this right now. That's what I want for a Sunday brunch.
Yes. Greetings from Chicago Lawn. Mary says, might be a stupid question. Again, Mary, no such thing. Johnny, in your situation, I'm assuming you also eat gluten-free all the time, along with Steve, of course. Yes, the day he was diagnosed, I actually gave all of my cookware away because I was concerned, even though I use a dishwasher, I was concerned that around the handles or around the screws and the workings of a skillet, that there might be some residue there. So I said, no, we're just going to get new stuff and start from scratch.
So our kitchens in Chicago and in Panama City Beach are gluten-free. And when we go out to my brother's in Munster, we have our own toaster and a couple other things that are just
our own crock pot,
never shared with anybody else.
Yep. So Mary says, a question, if your body is used to gluten and you don't have celiac disease, does it affect your body at the beginning maybe? It did not... It did not affect me. 25 years ago, it was dreadful. The food that was available just was not good. So I was
told the story, but I'll tell it again very briefly. When I was diagnosed, we went out the next day, went to a Whole Foods, got some frozen bread, and I should have had a clue when it said, end date is a year from now. We got it home and tried to cut it. It was like a brick.
It was sad.
We couldn't eat it. We threw it out. The birds wouldn't even eat it.
It was
a quarter of a century ago.
And the hungry birds are going, I'm not touching that.
Now there are, today, the taste of something gluten-free shouldn't scare you away. Not only should it not scare you away, you should love it.
Yes. So as time went on, I was doing a lot of bread baking at home so that we could have something that was edible, and that was time consuming, and it has always been expensive. It breaks my heart for people who are on a very, very tight budget, because when you buy a loaf of bread now and it can run you $10 for a loaf of bread, it's obscene.
Again, different than it is in other countries.
Yeah.
In Europe, when you're born, they run a test.
Mm-hmm.
And celiac sprue is one of the things they test for. And if you turn out positive for celiac sprue, then there is a discount that you're given on everything.
You actually can go to a pharmacy and purchase your gluten-free foods at places in Europe, and you can get a tax break. You're not paying $10 for a loaf of bread.
Now, I haven't actively looked into this, but I just recently found out, and I guess it's been the case for a while, that in this country, having a gluten intolerance is now recognized as a disability.
As a disability, yes. I'm not sure what that translates to.
I don't know what that means. But.
Yeah. But I felt like it was something that we had to do. It's just like, for example, you're diagnosed with diabetes, so you decide, okay, we're going to learn how to adjust. And the difference is with diabetes, you can eat sugar and not make that other person ill. If I were to consume gluten, and quite frankly, if gluten's on my lips and I kiss Steve, he could get very, very sick.
It's like rat poison to me. And there are different levels. Everybody is impacted differently. With me, it's not an allergy. It is an absolute intolerance.
And it's just like Chris Rich said last week, gluten is like glitter. If you got it in the house, it gets everywhere. And that's why we were so impressed with DeLuciano's restaurant. Sadly, they're no longer open.
Yeah.
But they had two separate kitchens. And one kitchen was completely separated from the exhaust system of the other so that flour
To the expense of two completely separate ventilating systems.
Because they didn't want flour to come into their ventilation system and contaminate the things that they were making gluten-free. I know that sounds really scary when you talk about contamination and such, but it's scary if you are celiac and you end up eating it and you're bent double for a week or two and you can't think clearly and you can't walk straight and you're in so much pain, those are some of the things that can happen to you.
That's one of the reasons why I say to people who, meaning well, say, oh, I'm so sorry to hear you were diagnosed. No, nothing to be sorry about. Be happy. I know what the problem is. I avoid it and I feel better. End of story.
Yes. As I said last week, it's the little C, not the big C. Anytime you can deal with the little C, and there's no drug that you have to take.
Yeah.
I know that there's some place in this world that they're working furiously to come up with a drug. You know it's going to happen.
We've said this for years. I feel strongly that one of the reasons that it has taken so long for celiac and gluten-free to become more mainstream is because no pharmaceutical company was going to make a dime off
this.
Right. You don't take a drug. You change your diet. You know what to avoid.
But somebody's coming up with a pill. You know it's going to happen in our lifetime.
And for some people, fine, I hope they come up with a pill. Yeah. Am I ever going to take that pill? No. I'm just not going to have gluten.
No. So, Mary, I think the only change I went through was nothing physical. I did not feel different. I did not feel I was lacking in any vitamins or minerals. And in fact, a short shortly after you were diagnosed, I saw a rheumatologist, highly respected. He's now out of Mayo, heads up the rheumatology department at Mayo in Minnesota. He was my doctor. He made you sign a paper that said if you were going to be his patient, you would go on a gluten-free diet. And I said, well, I already am. And he said, good, because I'm trying to educate people that in the world of arthritis, one of the number one aggravators is gluten.
And he was the one that told Johnny that if she hadn't been gluten-free, she wouldn't be able to get out of bed.
So, God bless him, I said, I already am. And he says, okay, well then, we're on the road, the right road to diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. And I feel strongly, because I think in 25 years, I might be able to count on one hand the times that I've had gluten.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, seriously, I remember those instances where I thought, well, I can do this.
Well, and I can count the one time within the past year that I was glutened, and sadly, it was on our trip to the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
We went to a restaurant. We thought it was going to be okay, and the next day I found out, well, actually, that night I found
that
out,
night.
No, it was not okay.
Yeah, and we knew something was up when your burger was brought out and there was a bun on your burger, and we said, no, we'll pay for another burger. We just want the burger on the plate. And I think it went on the plate where that burger in the bun had been. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a new plate. So they apparently didn't get it. And at least you weren't sick for the whole week that we were there. Yeah. That was a good thing. So coming up, I'm going to have a brunch recipe for you. It's actually a lot more simple than it may sound when I lay it out for you. And it's so easy to make it gluten-free. So if you have family or friends that come over for holidays or just to have a cup of coffee with you, surprise them. Say, look, I made something for you that's safe. So that'll be coming up just a moment here on WGN.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're going to get to Johnny's recipe in just a second, but I'm playing this because of a text that we had. This is something called the A Little More Less Medley. I wrote this several years ago after we came out with our book about Les Paul, A Little More Less. And the reason I'm playing it, what you're hearing, there's no overdubs on this. I'm playing the lead guitar, and a terrific musician who sadly is no longer with us, Dave Lloyd, was playing a Chapman stick.
Hmm.
We had a text asking if we were familiar with the Chapman stick.
Yes, Peter, that's you. And he sent a link to the Chapman stick. He's just discovered it. It's an incredible instrument to see someone play because it looks wrong.
A Chapman stick is basically
a big old stick.
It's imagine a guitar without the curves,
without the body.
It's a big long stick, 10 strings. No normal human being should be able to play this instrument.
And the balance is weird because you're holding a stick on an angle.
But the guy you're hearing playing behind me, Dave Lloyd, he's playing all of the background on a Chapman stick.
Yeah. I told Peter the goofy story. Dave, in a small town in Florida, in the Panhandle, had his house broken into, and his Chapman stick was stolen.
Yeah.
And he walks into a neighborhood dive bar, and there's the jerk trying to sell it. He's saying, hey, and nobody knows what it is. And I'm like, hey, dude, what are you trying to sell? And he's trying to, $50, it's yours. And Dave walks in, that's mine.
Yep.
And calls the police. They come, they take it from the guy. I guess they arrested him. And Dave then entertained the bar.
Yeah.
After he said, this is what it does, folks. Thank you for not buying it. You know, people are thinking, do I put that in my fireplace? I mean, it's just a piece of wood.
But if you're a guitar player and you're thinking, oh, well, I'll try a Chapman stick, I wouldn't recommend it if you really, really want to. But if you think you can play 10 strings, and this isn't like one of Muriel Anderson's harp guitars. This is all of the 10 strings are pretty much together and impossible to play for normal human beings.
Because with a harp guitar, you're holding like a child in your lap. You're holding two guitars connected, like a Siamese twin guitar.
Yeah.
And with a stick, it's a stick. It's very strange. But thank you for bringing that up, Peter, and for sending the link. A couple questions about gluten-free, gluten intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Listener says, potato chips and pretzels. Do potato chips and pretzels have gluten? Yes, pretzels do. But there are really, really good pretzels that are made
that are gluten-free.
Snyder's, they're known for their pretzels. They make a great, crunchy, gluten-free pretzel. Most potato chips, Lay's potato chips, for example, are gluten-free. Yep. Not all are. If you get a tube of potato chips, some of them with coating on them, they're not. But nowadays, you're going to see a label if it's gluten-free.
Yeah.
Even on potato chips, you think, well, that's just potatoes, but some of them have a coating.
And what are the ones that come in the little cans that are specifically...
The Pringles, Lay's. You can't do Pringles, but you can do Lay's.
Lay's are gluten-free, but it looks like a Pringles can.
Can, yes.
But it's Lay's.
But don't get confused and get the Pringles, because a lot of the Pringles are not. Another listener says, is neuropathy ever caused by gluten intolerance? Well, it doesn't cause it, but gluten can ease neuropathy. That's what I've learned from studying...
gluten can ease, or gluten-free can ease?
Excuse me, gluten-free. Thank
okay.
you. Adopting a strict gluten-free diet can reduce nerve pain.
Right.
That's been proven by the doctor who's now at Mayo. He says, I know for a fact that it is an aggravator for neuropathy as well as all forms of arthritis. Mm-hmm. So... that might help you out. You might give it some thought and see if you feel any different. You might start with a Dutch baby.
Yes.
That's this week's recipe. It's the Dutch baby. The Dutch baby is a German pancake, a Dutch puff. It looks like a big old popover, which are very popular, a little bit like a Yorkshire pudding. But this is a brunch treat. If you're in Chicago, Ashley Walker Brothers. Have you ever done Walker Brothers?
I've never heard of that.
You're kidding.
You're kidding.
Waffle Brothers?
Walker.
Oh.
Walker.
And you
well,
say you're a Chicagoan?
Oh, my gosh,
we
girl.
Have to take your
Walker
card away.
Brothers.
Walker Brothers. Walker yes, they're Brothers. Known for their apple pancake and their Dutch baby.
Well, both of those sound incredible.
Yes.
I've never heard of this.
Oh,
ever.
My gosh. Okay, have you ever had a Dutch baby?
I believe I have.
So it's a big, puffy... Just looks odd, like an alien, and you serve it with lemon wedges and powdered sugar, not syrup.
Okay, I'm looking at it. I've never had this.
It's so good.
I am deprived of
the
of
next
culture
time,
here.
The next time you're here, I'll bring in Dutch baby.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, because Dutch babies, they look much more complicated than they are, but if you've ever been to Walker Brothers, and Walker Brothers does make a great gluten-free waffle.
Yes, they
and
do.
And pancake. I have to hand it to them. They do a really good job of that. But... I use an iron skillet. I find that it really makes a Dutch baby Dutch. Whatever that means.
Okay.
So preheat your oven to 425 in a 10 or 12-inch iron skillet. You've got it in the oven while you're mixing up 3 extra large or jumbo eggs. If you've only got large eggs, use 4 of those, a half a cup of milk, and a half a cup of all-purpose flour. Now, in my case, I pick up flour at Jewel, Mariano's, Walmart, all over the place. Amazon, King Arthur makes a fantastic measure-for-measure gluten-free flour. Only a tablespoon of sugar in this, a half a teaspoon of vanilla extract, a half a teaspoon of lemon zest. It's optional. You don't have to do it. You're going to squeeze lemon on top of the Dutch baby. A quarter of a teaspoon of salt. If you're using salted butter, don't bother. 2 tablespoons of butter. Now, confectioner sugar / powdered sugar and lemon wedges are typically how I serve it. You can certainly eat warm maple syrup over the Dutch baby.
Yes, you can.
So while the oven is preheating to 425 with the skillet inside, you mix all the ingredients but the butter and the toppings. When the oven is heated, remove the skillet carefully, she said, having grabbed the handle of an iron skillet before.
Mm-hmm.
You put the butter in that hot skillet and it's going to sizzle. Carefully hold the hot skillet and roll it around so the butter coats the bottom of the skillet, and then immediately pour in your batter. Pop it in the oven. It's set at 425. You're going to bake it for 12 to 15 minutes, and that baby will just blow up. It just puffs up. It's beautiful. You'll see a picture of it. And you take it out of the oven. It will slowly deflate, but that doesn't mean it loses flavor or consistency. It's just yummy. You can cut it in wedges, sprinkle your powdered sugar, serve it with wedges of lemon. You squeeze a lemon on top of the powdered sugar, and it makes a wonderful syrup. And there you have it. That's your Dutch baby, your German pancake.
And again, the recipe is up on our Facebook page, and it will be all over the place over the weekend.
If you don't have an iron skillet, I have used a cake pan. I would use a 9-inch round cake pan, and you pop that in the oven and let it get really good and hot while the oven is heating up. Then when you take it out carefully and it's really hot, and you plop that butter in there and it sizzles and you swirl it around so it coats the bottom of the pan, pour your batter in, it's going to blow up, and it's going to be so good.
I'm so hungry right now.
That's so good. Oh, man. And you like your Dutch baby with maple syrup. I'm big on the...
I like it both ways.
Powdered sugar with the lemon wedges. Oh, kill me.
You can't go wrong.
So listeners says,
Ashley, you have to try this.
I know. I'm salivating. I'm looking at these pictures of Walker Brothers, and I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Have you looked at the picture from our blog that Johnny put up on our Facebook page?
I just posted it.
Wait, let me pull this up.
And a listener from 330 says, Walker Brothers is the best. It is. Shout out to Walker Brothers for making really yummy breakfast food so you can go out with friends and you can eat and you can feel safe.
Is it a part of the pre-show drive-in? Or is it before? Oh, here, I see
there it
now.
Is. It'll be
right
at the very top. I just posted it.
Just click on the link and that'll take you to our blog and you'll see the pictures of the Dutch baby that Johnny makes, and it's so good. I'm so hungry for it.
I do have a cast iron skillet, so I could potentially.
Ooh. You could do this.
I should.
You know what?
My roommate will be really excited.
He'll be doing it every week because it's really simple and it's not that much going on, but it is a great presentation.
By the way, the Food Jones continues after the news because we're going to segue and talk to our friend Neil Samors, the author who has a terrific book out called Corn Beef on Rye. Oh, yeah. More Food Jones coming up. Steve.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing. Their family has your family covered.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. A little conversation going on in a deli.
Mm-hmm. An actual corned beef on rye song.
Yes,
and we're continuing with our theme.
Food Jones.
Of food, yes. Oh, my gosh. There is a wonderful new book out. It's called Corned Beef on Rye, Remembering Chicago's Jewish Delicatessens. It's written by Neil Samors and Eric Bronski. Neil joins us tonight. Hi, Neil. Thanks for stopping by WGN.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
Good. So what is this, number 39? Is this number 39 or 40 for you?
This is 39.
39?
I'm already working on 40.
Oh, my gosh. We're talking about books that Neil has written. Are they all primarily Chicago-centric, Neil, all 39?
Every one of them it relates to Chicago, yes, that's true.
You should be in the Guinness Book of Records because you have to be the most prolific Chicago writer.
Well, I only take credit. I always describe it as I'm editor, I'm author, co-author, and or publisher of 39 books. So I didn't write all of them.
Wow.
But I was involved with all of them.
That's true. Oh, yes, I remember the Clark Weber book.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's right.
I have to tell you, and I'm not just saying this because you're on with us tonight, this may be one of my top two or three favorite books that you've had anything to do with it.
Yes.
I love this book.
I agree, Johnny. Steven, I'll tell you this. Our mutual friend, Ronnie Rice,
in
the book.
Mm-hmm.
When
I
said it to him, he said, Neil, I feel like eating the book.
Yeah.
That's so Ronnie.
Oh, boy, is that Ronnie.
That should be the blurb for the book. I feel like eating the book.
And, right. And I love, along with all the pictures, well, in particular, I love seeing a place that Johnny and I used to go to on a regular basis, the Milk Pail Restaurant.
Yes, the Milk Pail Store.
Store, yeah.
Yeah. Because you walk in there on a Saturday night, and the rabbi would be there in their big old
Saturday mornings, we would walk over there and just, it was so good.
Well, all right, Neil.
And that was one of Bob Surratt's favorite places, too.
That's right. And Bob Surratt's one of the celebrities that you've interviewed. They share their nostalgic memories of delicatessens in Chicago. Let's start with the basics, Neil. What defines a delicatessen? How does it differ than a sandwich shop?
Well, you know, Johnny, that's the real question here, because a lot of places, I would say, serve deli food, or you can buy deli food, mm-hmm. but they're not pure delicatessens. A place like Ashkenaz or Manny's or some of the other places over the years that are really where you can buy the food and you can eat there too.
Mm-hmm.
So, and some, a lot of the places nowadays are bagel shops too. So it's a combination.
Right, right. And New York is kind of, I always think of New York and delis, I think of On Stage is the place where people say, I've got to go to the On Stage in New York. But
right.
Our delis are better, aren't they?
Well, what separates Chicago delis from
New York
and other cities?
Well, you know, in the book we have several people like Anna Pinckney, who talks about, because she was from New York.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she really says she really hasn't found a deli in Chicago, a delicatessen that really matches up with New York. So New York has a certain kind of personality, and you have to remember that in Chicago, and I guess in New York, delicatessens are more than just eating places. They were gathering places. They
yep.
were places where you'd meet friends and eat and talk.
You tell a funny story in the opening of the book about Ashkenaz. That was an important part of your childhood growing up in that neighborhood. Tell the story about your grandma when she would go to Ashkenaz and actually go behind the counter?
Yes, my 4'10" grandmother, who decided that even though she wasn't supposed to go behind the counter, she saw a piece of smoked fish that she wanted. She walked around behind the counter and pointed right at it. So, and you didn't mess with my grandma because she
yeah.
would knock you down.
Yeah, at 4'10". But that was a very popular one. Now, do you recall off the top of your head when Ashkenaz closed?
Well, Ashkenaz had a couple of fires, and so it was a fire probably in the, I'm guessing, I think, if I remember, sometime in the 70s.
Okay.
When it did burn down, and they opened up an Ashkenaz near in downtown or off of Oak Street there. Mm-hmm. They opened up another one on Lake Street and in Wilmette, but neither one of them captured what the original Ashkenaz had captured.
Mm-hmm. Was the Pickle Barrel considered a deli?
Well, again, the Pickle Barrel is the kind of place we went to, and you could have delicatessen. Mm-hmm. You can get a corned beef sandwich there, or you could get lox and bagels, but it didn't have a counter, a deli counter per se, where you'd go buy food.
Right, and you take it out with you. Because I'm thinking of it must have been the Belden Deli that we used to go to.
Yes.
Because I grew up in an old town, and we would walk to the Belden Deli, and I swear, as a kid, it looked like there was a pound of meat on the corned beef sandwich. I mean, it was huge. And
was it one of the Belden Delis that we used to go to on Western and
South?
No, you're thinking of Braverman's.
I thought there was a Belden at Howard.
At Howard and Western.
Okay, the Howard and Western, there was a gold coin.
Yes.
There were places, I'm thinking of a place on Ashland and Chicago, and I think it was North Avenue, mm-hmm. called Braverman's. When you talk about Braverman's, you'd go in there, and they'd create a corned beef sandwich, and we'd have a pound of corned beef on there, and with a big sign right in front of your face says,
yes.
Don't ask for extra bread.
That's right. I do remember that, because you would get so much, you would think, all right, I can make like three sandwiches sitting here at the table.
Yeah.
Don't ask for extra bread. That's for sure.
Right. Exactly.
All right. This book is so much fun, and you have unearthed some great graphics for the book, too. So we're talking with Neil Samors. His book that he's put together with Eric Bronski is Corned Beef on Rye, Remembering Chicago's Jewish Delicatessens. Neil's going to have a book event coming up. We'll tell you about that, where you can get the book. You can also find it on Amazon, all over the place. Neil will stay with us right after this on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putnam at WGN Radio. We're talking with Neil Samors about this terrific new book, Corned Beef on Rye, Remembering Chicago's Jewish Delicatessens. And we had a text from a 608 area code. It said they said the milk pail, was that the milk pail that used to be on the corner of Devon and McCormick?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's the one.
Actually, west of McCormick.
Right.
Yeah, right across the street from the post office. Remember it well with the big old, I just keep thinking about the pickles, the big old vat of pickles that were back by the deli counter. Yeah, the book is it takes you through so many wonderful memories, and many of the memories are shared from folks who lived these things, like we mentioned Ronnie Rice
and Bob Surratt
and Ina Pinckney, Rich Melman, Mark Shulman from Eli's Cheesecake. Neil, it must have been fun just reaching out to people and saying, just tell us what your memories are of delicatessens, and what did you eat, and what role did this play in your life? How long did it take you guys to put the book together?
Only about 6 months.
Really?
You're kidding.
Yep. Wow.
Well, we were hungry, so we went ahead and did it in 6 months.
But I would have thought some of the research for some of the wonderful
pictures.
Photographs you have would have taken longer than that. Where'd you get these pictures? They're great.
Many of the pictures, well, first of all, the background was a couple of years ago, the Illinois Holocaust Museum had an exhibit called I'll Have What She's Having,
yes.
Which is an exhibit going mm-hmm. on. And there were four speakers who did a presentation, Rich Melman, Larry Levy, Mark Shulman, and Ken Raskin.
Huh.
And I got in touch with all of them before I started the book. They all contributed, and they all contributed photographs and stories, and I did interviews with all of them.
Wow. And Ken Raskin was affiliated with what, Dell?
Manny's.
He was Manny's.
The Raskin family owns Manny's. In fact, we just did a book signing at Manny's, and I had a delicious corned beef sandwich there.
Yeah. Well, are you surprised at the turnout? Didn't you have over 100 folks that came out?
No, that was Max and Benny. Max and Benny's, we had 175 people.
Wow.
But we did Manny's last week. It was raining. It was traffic backed up all the way on the Kennedy. We had 10 people.
Wow. Yeah.
So, but it was still delicious.
You have another signing coming up, don't you, in a couple weeks?
On June 3rd from 1 to 2 at Mensch's, located on Chicago Avenue in Evanston.
So where are we today in the world of delicatessens?
Is anything going to happen with the bagel at Old Orchard?
Yeah.
Yes, the bagel. It turns out that Marvin Barsky just announced that the bagel is going to be opened up in Glenview, near the Glenview train station, and then soon in the near future.
Wow.
Because the bagel in Old Orchard used to be one of our favorite places.
Yeah.
Same here.
Yeah. And
he tried for a long time to get Old Orchard to give him space again, and went back and forth and back and forth, and they just wouldn't do it. And so he finally looked around and found a space in Glenview.
Perfect location, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So when you think back on delis, Ashkenaz, I think from what I read in the book, is one of your favorites. Is it fair to ask you what your favorite place would be today?
Well, again, I still love the bagel on the bagel over on Broadway, and go there. I like Max and Benny's a lot in Northbrook, and I go there regularly. And I said I miss some of the old places like an Ashkenaz that had a personality because I grew up within a couple blocks of there, and so that was the center of our life. For those of us in East Rogers Park.
Do you do the same thing that I do anytime I walk into a good deli? You walk in and you have to pause for a second and just, take in the smell.
Yes.
No, that's a good sign of a good deli.
Yeah.
The odors and the smells and then looking at the food and the personalities of the people behind the counter who talk to you in a certain way.
That's right. In fact, I sometimes think the Wiener Circle took that whole approach and then kind of pushed it.
Put it on steroids.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I think I have in the book, one of the funniest stories was by someone I interviewed years ago, a man named Shecky Green.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And his original name was Sheldon Greenfield. He went to my grammar school, Field School, and he went to Sullivan High School, where I went. Mm-hmm. And Shecky Green told me when I interviewed him, he said, because he was good friends with the Ashkenaz owners, he said he walked in one day and there was a waitress came up to him with all food all over her apron. And he said, honey, take the apron off and just go put it in some hot water and make me some soup.
You're
Shecky Green.
Yes. But, you know, as I'm reading your book, I'm thinking it's the 21st century. Why can't we do scratch and sniff where you could just scratch that cover and go,
But as you said, this book we now publish our books as print on demand through Amazon, and all people have to do is go to Amazon.com and they can order the book either softcover or hardcover from Amazon.
That's wonderful. So are you say you're working on number 40. Can you tease us about where you're going with that one?
You'll appreciate this one. I'll tell you the title. It's called I Can't Wait Until Next Year, The Agony of Being a Cub Fan.
Oh, that's good.
But this is a good year for the Cubs and the Sox.
Yeah.
That's right. It is.
It's going to be, okay, something to look forward to. Let me take you back to corned beef on rye, remembering Chicago's Jewish delicatessens. When I look at the people who talked about it, I got the feeling when I was reading some of the essays, like Ronnie Rice's essay, that people get emotional about those moments when you're standing in line at the delicatessen, you're ordering your bagels, you're thinking about, am I going to do corned beef or am I going to do pastrami? It's just, there's a different kind of relationship with food when it comes to deli food, don't you think?
Absolutely. And people have had it over the years. As we were growing up, it was just like I said, astronauts, but going to Larry Levy's place, D.B. Kaplan's in Water Tower, because he created a menu that had very creative titles for
That's
the food,
right.
And so that added to it. And the same thing that Melman did with Let Us Entertain You, where he created menus like at R.J. Grunt's that had a certain creative kind of flair to it. That's what delis were. And delis were, just, again, personalities. It's almost, I reminded in Seinfeld, of the soup Nazi.
Exactly.
You walk into certain delis where the guy would say, don't you talk to me that way. I'll tell you what you're going to order.
That's right.
You're talking about baseball, and one of my favorite pictures is this 1964 White Sox baseball schedule from Bats Restaurant and Lounge.
Yes, Bats Restaurant, yes.
Now, they were known for taking the dining experience to the next level by actually shuttling you to events, right?
Right.
That's crazy.
And personality.
Yeah.
And very creative, and people feel very committed to delis, their favorite ones. And you know where you want to go for a bowl of Creplex soup or matzo ball soup or a corned beef sandwich, and you keep on going back.
And you know what you never hear people talk about in a deli? At least this is the way it was when I was growing up. You never hear them talking about calories. Like, wow, this is going to be a fattening meal I'm eating. Nope, you just eat it. It's like soup for the soul. If you have a little Creplex, if you have a little corned beef, you're going to feel better, right?
Right, exactly.
It's not all about, I'm going to get fat from this meal. No.
Am I the only one who is smelling deli food just from this conversation right now?
No, you're not.
So are you going to have a corned beef when you hang up?
That's a good idea. Yeah.
But you know, that's one of the foods that I've tried and I cannot make at home. It just never, ever tastes like what you can get. Maybe it's because I don't have a meat slicer like they have at a deli. It's just never the same.
But it has to be on rye.
Well, yeah, but have you tried making it at home, Neil?
But I want to tell you that, growing up and going to Ashkenaz, there was a little place next to Ashkenaz called Freuchen's.
Mm-hmm.
If you grew up on Morse Avenue, where after high school, we'd walk over and get a hot piece of kishki, and then go next door to Davidson's and get a whole challah and eat all that on the way home.
And I worked at Davidson's when I was going to high school at Senn High School, and there was nothing like coming home. I finally ended up at Davidson's downtown, and I'd get on the train, and people would start going, I smell food. And it was me they were smelling. And I'm like, yes, I'm sugar-coated from being at Davidson's Bakery. Oh, golly. Well, congratulations, Neil.
Thank you.
And again, if people want to get the book, how do they do it?
Just go to Amazon.com, go online, you'll put in my name or put in corned beef on rye, it'll pop up, and you can order it, and they'll print on demand, and within a few days, I think it's not like a soft cover, you can probably get shipped to you in a few days, they take over, and they just ship it out, and that's it.
Awesome.
And if people want to see you in person, your next appearance is?
At Mensch's on Chicago Avenue in Evanston on June 3rd from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock.
Awesome. Congratulations, Neil. You've done good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
Take care. Bye-bye now. The book is Corned Beef on Rye, Remembering Chicago's Jewish Delicatessens. It's available in hardcover and paperback by Neil Samors, Samors, and Eric Bronski. News is next on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. And we're playing Harry Connick Jr. for two reasons.
It's kind of spooky.
Yeah, one of them being that we just finished talking about delis,
mm-hmm.
and there's that wonderful scene.
I'll have what she's having.
From Harry Met Sally. Yeah. And
you ever seen When Harry Met Sally?
I love that movie. Good. I love all Meg Ryan movies that are of that nature and of that time when she did it, like every single movie that was mm-hmm. a rom-com type situation.
See, we were Meg Ryan fans before movies because she was on one of our favorite soap operas.
As the World Turns. Yes. She grew up on As the World Turns.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. So they are.
So there's that, the deli scene.
But Harry Connick Jr. is going to be on the stage of Carnegie Hall on the 22nd of May for the first time in his life.
And he's doing it to commemorate what would have been his mom's 100th birthday. This is such a cool story.
It is. So his mother was diagnosed with ovarian cancer when he was 10 years old. And he was a very, very prolific pianist at the time. And she would say to him, "I'll die happy when you play Carnegie Hall." And apparently, as a child, he called Carnegie Hall and said, "Hi, I play piano. I'd like to know if I can play for my mom at Carnegie Hall." And they said, "Well, you reached the box office, and maybe you need to wait a while." Well, she passed away 7 years ago, and his agent called Carnegie Hall and said, "Can we book Harry Connick for 7 years from now?" 7 years down the road.
Yeah.
It will be his mother's, what would have been her 100th birthday. And they booked him. And
that is so cool.
He's never walked out on the stage at Carnegie Hall. He's never even been in the theater. And he said, "This is going to be amazing to be able to say, I'm here to play for my mom."
That's such a great story.
Yeah.
I love everything about that.
I love the fact that as a kid, he called and said, "I need to play Carnegie Hall for my mom." "I'm sorry, you've reached the box office, young man. Call back some other time."
But even as a kid, he was pretty driven. I mean, he knew what he wanted to do.
It gives me goosebumps when I think about that. And then the fact that his agent was so savvy to say, "You know what? He's Harry Connick. You know who he is. Mm-hmm. We don't want to play there next year. We want to play 7 years from now because we think it would be really special for him." And there's just a great story behind it.
Yeah.
And thankfully, they leapt at it. So he's going to be performing on May 22nd. He said he'll make good on his mother's wish. He will perform a once-in-a-lifetime show that he says has been decades in the making. He said, "It's almost legendary in my mind." And you imagine...
Sure.
It's bigger than just walking out and playing piano.
He's going to be emotional.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to do a video of that night. I would hope so.
I would hope so, too. His mom was from New York, so that's why it was so important to her. And, of course, it was the epitome of performance. And he always felt that she was the driving force behind him becoming who he is. So the decision was made to make it a special occasion. And if you've got tickets for that show, it's been 45 years since I wanted to play there. Because I, you know, when they turned him down as a kid, he said, but I decided if this was going to be the first time, it couldn't be any better than me walking out on that stage and looking up to the heavens and saying, "Hey, Mom, you were everything to me." Oh, Anita Frances Levingston Connick, or Babe as she was known, would have been 100 years old, and she passed away when he was 13 years old. She was diagnosed when he was 10. He has become one of the most renowned artists in the world, releasing more than 24 albums, winning 3 Grammys, including one for what we just heard from When Harry Met Sally. He also acted in blockbuster films like Independence Day, The Iron Giant, along with Will and Grace. He was wonderful on the Will and Grace television show.
Oh, he was terrific on that. He said that he's not going in that building until about 7:30 that night. And he said, "I've written essentially a symphony for her.
Mm.
It's this big 50-minute long composition. First movement was when she was in New York. Second movement was in North Africa.
Oh, my God.
Where she met my dad. And the third movement was in New Orleans, when I was born."
Oh.
I love everything about this story. This is so cool.
Yes. He's going to do two nights, too. So I suspect that May 23rd is going to be a little easier than May 22nd will be. And if you're lucky enough to be at either one of those performances, it's going to be something else.
He said that he's also, he has written, releasing a book dedicated to his mom, which will be out in September.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. He said, no performance I've ever done will come close to what I will do on the stage at Carnegie Hall, and no performance after that. I mean, it's impossible. I may just have to stop performing. Wow. Great story.
He was one of the judges that I really enjoyed when he was a judge on American Idol many seasons ago.
Because he knows music.
He would actually take the time and give reasonable, not just, sometimes they go over the top with the
Oh, you're going to be the next winner.
Yeah. He would give thoughtful critiques.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that.
You're right. And I liked him as an actor. I think he's a super actor, too. So good for you, Harry Connick Jr. Haven't heard much about him recently. And then all of a sudden, I came across that story last week. And when I dried my tears, I said, we have to share this story with the audience because it's just incredible.
But now that scene in the deli is replaying. And I still can't get over that. 1989 was when that movie came out.
I know. Didn't we see it at the Old Orchard?
Yeah, we did.
Didn't we eat at the bagel?
We did.
And then we went.
You think we don't plan the show? Everything ties together.
I know. Oh, I got to get in touch with reality. We'll be back after this.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Little shout music, and that means it is time for our weekly shout-outs, where we say hi and thank you to some of the people who are nice enough to check in with us. And I want to start with some of the people who are nice enough to check out our blog. And if you haven't, we'd really appreciate it if you did. Just go to Steve and Johnny, and spell Johnny, J-O-H-N-N-I-E, steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And we'd appreciate it if you would subscribe to our blog. There is no fee. We don't spam you. We don't sell your information. You just get an email anytime we do a new blog post. And we're constantly amazed at some of the people from around the world who are checking out our blog. And I'm just going to give you some of the top 10 countries this week that have been checking out our blog. Number one, of course, the United States. Number two, Germany. Number three, Hong Kong, SAR, China. Number four, Singapore. Number five, Belgium. Number six, Canada. Number seven, the Netherlands. Number eight, Australia.
Wow.
Number nine, Italy. And number 10, the United Kingdom. Those are the top 10 countries this week that are checking out our blog.
I think Australia is new this week.
I think they are.
And Belgium.
Yeah.
And Italy. Italy is new this week with a time difference.
So thank you for listening to us and checking out our blog from all over the world.
Wow. Well, looking at the post on our Facebook page, and people post when we put up what's coming up on the show, we ask that you tell us where you're listening from. So those listeners, as well as the listeners who are commenting under our drive to work pictures, our work here is done. We can go home because everybody's sitting at the kitchen table right now. They're eating whatever's in their house.
So the food Jones has worked.
Yes, yes. So many people said, that's it. I got to have a sandwich. That's it. I've got to have something. And many, many people said, after looking at the ribs, I'm making the ribs.
It's going to happen. Make those ribs. They are so good.
Stop it.
Well, they are.
Okay. Shout out to Sherry Hanrahan was one of the first folks in here from beautiful Romeoville. A lot of folks that are saying, yay, Sox. I know that you and Steve are happy, and we are. It was a great game tonight. George Clemens from Augusta, Georgia, loves listening to Steve and Johnny on Saturday night. And, George, we love knowing that you're out there, too. Gail Maslin is in Tinley Park. Mike is in Elmwood Park. He says, I'm listening in tonight. My bypass surgery that I had 4 months ago, he said, I feel great, and I am back to work as a crossing guard in River Grove. Well, God bless you.
Congratulations. Good for you.
That's a huge hurdle, too.
Can I go back to the blog for a second?
Yes.
Because, and kind of going back to when we were talking about the gluten-free hotel in Monroe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
On our blog, Gene Jacobson said, I will be listening from Milwaukee. I will be interested in the gluten-free hotel in Monroe. Monroe is where I met my husband on a blind date in 1966.
Hmm.
We've been married since 1967. I was there many times. Sounds like a great show. Then also we heard on our blog from, I'll be listening from Sandwich and watching the Crosstown Classic. So exciting, Debbie Tusick. And she said, go Cubs. And then Robin Aiken says, Steve and Johnny, wow, another great show tonight. I'll be listening from Port Charlotte, Florida on my cell phone tonight.
Hmm. JP is listening from Peoria. I tuned into the 50,000-watt love pump. So JP's been around for a while. He remembers that. Miriam is in Seneca. And she says, I love Saturday nights with Steve and Johnny, and we love having you along. Also from Koshkonong Township, Wisconsin, is Jim G. I have to chuckle every time. Rob and Amy are in Whiting, Indiana. Cubs will be ready for tomorrow. Go Cubs, go, says 630 area code. In your dreams. JW and Dolly Mink are listening in Chesapeake, Virginia. From Pensacola Beach, Steve and Johnny, always glad hearing from you guys. Stick around, Pensacola. Bing Besh is in Winfield. Tom, oh, a couple of listeners were talking about Tom Cruise in the 40th anniversary of Top Gun. Still blows me away. Dave in Chicago checks in. Let's see here. Mitch Kuchonian in Gahanna, Ohio, former Evanston native, is stopping by. Chicago Lawn checks in. Let's see here. I'm scrolling through the folks who've texted. You can text us throughout the show at 312-981-7200. Stacy Drager is in Algonquin. Pete Jukubowicz from Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Diane Vasquez, who's our graphics guru. Mm-hmm. She's checking in. And she's like a hostess for our show because she likes to greet folks on Facebook.
Yes.
Hello, Peter. How are you today? Yes. It's a lovely Saturday. Thank you, Diane. You're a great representative for the show. Judy B. is tuned in from Oak Lawn, listening on her Sea Crane radio. Lynn Kinzer's in San Antonio, Florida. John Couture, who's doing great in college. He was originally studying for radio and television, and as he puts it, no one was interested, so he had to go into just mass media. But he's doing really well. Brian Lefevre, tuned in from Bridgeport. Beverly Goodall, how about those White Sox? Yeah.
How about those White Sox?
Helen Thomas is in K-Town, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Susie Schimmel in Glen Ellen. Jackie Spores in Milton, Wisconsin. Scott Cooper's in Naperville. Roger Camp is in Athens, Ohio. Michelle Fairfield, hello, Peoria. Janice Coratobi is in Lake Geneva. Tracy Douglas tuned in from Savannah. Joan Bloom is in Greenville, South Carolina. Susan Powell is in Memphis, listening on her AM radio.
That's Memphis, baby.
That's right. Donna Youngheim is in Oak Lawn. Ellen Maria is in Marengo. Chuck Snitchler, best friend of this radio show and this radio station, is tuned in with a lovely picture.
That's such a cute picture of one
Athena.
Of his nieces.
Yes, yeah. Athena is a doll, and she pops up every now and then.
Speaking of pictures, I haven't seen a picture from Maine.
No, from Eric Baum.
Yeah.
He always puts us a Maine picture up, and as we always say every week, the Board of Tourism should hire that man because his pictures are stunning. Jan Reinhardt is in the laboratory.
Laboratory. Yes.
Sharon Malone in Kenosha. Gloria Fosiek is tuned in from Buffalo Grove. Carrie Johnson's in Palm Coast, Florida. Kathy Abnar is in Peoria. Carrie Hunt is in Ruskin, Florida. Thank you, Florida. Well represented tonight. Ron Mecklen, Rob and Amy tuned in. Roy Phillips is listening on the app in Northwest Illinois. Larry Mann's in Miami, Florida. Janet Gellert's in Gainesville, Florida. Are we up to like seven cities in Florida?
I think so.
Tom Murphy's in Lakeland, Florida. Make that eight. Carrie Carlson's tuned in. Todd Moe's in Egg Harbor, Wisconsin, one of our favorite places. Indeed, it is God's country. Patrice Chintara is in Northwest Indiana. And if I miss you, I apologize. I promise I'll get you next week.
Did we mention Chuck Freeman?
No, I don't think I did.
Who just made such a nice comment. He said, it's been great to get reacquainted with your show after all these years. Never stop producing the great content you two produce on these Saturday nights. Well, thank you, Chuck.
You.
We appreciate that.
Yes. He was, in fact, a bunch of folks had posted under our drive to work pictures, which include pictures of our little celebratory spread of ribs, coleslaw, and French fries, which I think pushed some people over the edge. They're like, that's it. I got to do ribs tomorrow.
And one of my favorite pictures, again, these are on our Facebook page. The picture that you took, we're driving by Senn High School, and there's a bunch of people playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a great picture.
Yeah. Greg Borgman says, I'm really liking the daylight shots. And that's why I know you're seeing basically some of the same places as we drive to work, because that's our drive to work. But with the difference of the seasons, it's so fun because, you know, most of those pictures for months now have been in the dark. And now the sun is in a different place, and I think we've got like 85 days where the sunset is after 8 o'clock in the evening. And so enjoy it while we've got it. Brian Lefevre tuned in from Bridgeport. Linda Moeller said those ribs looked delectable. Ray McKenzie says he grew up right across the street at $180 a month. Wow. Norb Rosansky says, so refreshing to hear you folks after that loss to the Sox. That's ugly.
You mean that wonderful loss to the Sox?
Yes. So you can get to us on our Facebook page, through our blog, or at 312-981-7200.
Coming up after the news, we're going to segue to the world of all things automotive. And boy, do we have a bunch of things to talk about with Tom Appel. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide. Stolen airbag thefts in Chicago. We'll talk about the new road tests, latest recalls. And there's a real interesting story that Tom is going to give us some more information about with the questions about the future of Dodge and Chrysler.
Yeah.
And that's been a little bit under the radar, but it's something that is going to absolutely make more of an impact over the next couple months.
Whole bunch of news in the auto world.
A lot more coming up, so stay with us on WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. And anytime you hear something a little unusual, that of course means we're going to be talking about all things automotive. With the publisher of Consumer Guide, that would be your Tom Appel. Hey, Tom.
Hey.
Hey. That's good music. I know who it is.
And how surprising that you would want to play anything by Mark Knopfler. What is tonight's Tom's Cartoons theme, Tom?
It's party time with Mark Knopfler.
Okay.
And I have visions of Mark Knopfler being so low-key partying. Right? I don't imagine him hooting and hollering. He's just kind of mellow.
I've seen him live, and it's rare that he stands up.
Yeah. One of my all-time favorite guitar albums is an album that Mark Knopfler did with Chet Atkins.
Oh, yeah.
It is just the best.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so some Mark Knopfler coming up this hour, along with a whole lot of car news, Tom. Can we start with the ridiculous? We'll go with from the goofy. The Waymo.
Oh yeah.
Taxis.
This is
in a Georgia suburb called Buckhead. These taxis are taking over the cul-de-sac.
They're attacking cul-de-sacs.
It's crazy.
And this is a true story with videos.
It's absolutely crazy. And for people who do not know what Waymo is now operating driverless taxis that you can pay for, like an Uber, in 10 different cities. And their success rate is really high. They don't have accidents. They're on time. They're working well. So when something goes wrong, it's extraordinarily odd. And in this case, it is so odd.
The video is freaky when you see a whole bunch of them in the same neighborhood. And then the people get out and they put cones up. And the taxis just go right through them.
I mean, literally, you see this video, and there are all these driverless Waymos and circling this cul-de-sac, and you expect to hear Rod Serling's voice talking about Waymos in the Twilight Zone. It is so strange.
If you guys think that this is a couple of cars, at one point there were 50. 50.
Count them, 5-0.
Can you imagine looking out your window and there are 50 driverless vehicles between 6 and 7 in the evening just driving round and round and round?
It's so weird. And this is in conjunction with a separate problem that Waymo's having right now.
Oh, there's more? Like
The cabs, which are all, by the way, Jaguars that Jaguar couldn't sell. It's the Jaguar I-Pace.
Oh, really?
Which is an electric crossover. So Waymo rather generously bought a bunch of them from Jaguar for use here. But apparently Waymo cabs like to drive into deep water, too. So,
Oh, my gosh!
And it's weird because they've been so good for so long, and all of a sudden this crazy stuff is happening. And there are billions and billions of lines of code, and everything should be getting better. So this is a very weird distraction.
But now, is this happening with all Waymo vehicles or only with the Jaguars that Waymo bought?
Actually, it might just be the Jaguars. The recall for the deep water affects 3,800 vehicles. And it's funny that they call it a recall. Because Waymo has issued the recall, and Waymo owns all the vehicles. So they're just playing by the rules, I think, very strictly in working through NHTSA and actually issuing recalls. But a lot of this is just them working on the cars they're working on. But that's very strange.
Well, I recommend that people just Google Waymo cars Georgia suburb. You have to see the video. On one hand, it's funny. On another hand, it's terrifying. When you look out and you see 50 vehicles. And I think quite seriously, a child was struck because the vehicle doesn't see a kid getting off a bus. It just, because if it's going to roll through cones, it's going to roll through anything.
And Waymos are becoming so much more popular. I just had a text from a friend who's out on the left coast and said she was having her first experience with a Waymo and enjoying it, but hopefully she won't wind up lost in a cul-de-sac someplace.
Or driving into standing water. In fact, we were talking at the top of the show, Tom, about the fact that it's the 40th anniversary of Top Gun, and a listener said that reminded them of a scene of Tom Cruise driving into the water. Has Tom Appel ever driven a car in water?
I have forded streams in vehicles that were made to do that.
Really?
Land Rover products. Yeah, not that deeply, but I've never actually driven a car into a vehicle that shouldn't be there. Yeah.
Good. Stick to that record, okay? Because to me, that's also, you know, they always say when heavy rain and flooding, and you see people saying, well, I can make it through there. I'm in a sport utility, and then all of a sudden they're exploding.
And I hate because about 85% of the times you will find someone in a big honking Hummer or something, and they float.
And then they float.
Yeah.
And then they're crawling out of their sunroof trying to get out of their $90,000 vehicle.
They're ruined.
Yeah, right.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we get back, there is so much more to talk about, so many interesting stories, including should we be concerned about the future of Dodge and Chrysler? So that and more coming up on WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love that. I don't do it no more, but I used to could. We are talking all things automotive with Tom Appel, and tonight's cartoons theme is
Party Time with Mark Knopfler.
And that is?
That song was I Used to Could off of Mark's 2012 solo album, Privateering. Great album.
Had a text at 312-981-7200. This person says, I live in Nashville. I saw Mark Knopfler live with Chet Atkins for $5 at 3rd and Lindsay, a club in Nashville. This was 30 years ago. Chet's grandson is a friend of mine. I had beers with him tonight. Well, Lucky you.
Yes.
Lucky guy.
Yeah. Third and Lindsay is a legendary club. And Chet Atkins. Mm-hmm. Chet Atkins started doing that after Les Paul started playing at Fat Tuesdays ultimately the Club Iridium. And Les would do that once a week. And Chet thought, you know, maybe I should do something like that, too.
Unless it had kept him going. Yeah. All right. We go from the silly Waymos taking over the neighborhood in Georgia. And so I wonder, what in that neighborhood is... Is there some teenage boy there that is in the basement manipulating this? What's going on?
But there's this other story that has been kind of bubbling around.
Yeah,
what
serious.
Is the deal with Dodge and Chrysler, and should we be concerned about their future?
Yeah, and the short answer is yes, be concerned. Back in 2022, Fiat Chrysler, the company that we called Fiat Chrysler, which had been a merger between the American Chrysler Group brands with Fiat, I guess that's self-explanatory, that company merged with PSA, which is Europe's Peugeot Citroën, to form one very, very large car company with way, way, way too many brands. Mm. So the situation is that there are 14, 15, or 17 brands, depending on how you count them. But in the U.S., we're primarily concerned with Chrysler and Dodge and Ram and Jeep, though Fiat is here and Maserati is here and Alfa Romeo is here, too. But those latter brands don't do much business here. But the problem is, and anyone who's been paying attention here know that Chrysler and Dodge have been starved for product, right? Chrysler just sells one minivan, the Pacifica, and Dodge just sells two vehicles right now, the Charger and the Durango, which is a midsize crossover. And that's it. Those brands, they're not being very well supported with product. They're not being well supported with marketing. And there's a real good chance we might see them disappear. Now, 2 weeks ago, Antonio Filosa, the new CEO of all of Stellantis, finally released a press release that wasn't very filled with information about the core brands moving forward. And those core brands moving forward are going to be Jeep, they're going to be Ram, and that makes sense because both those brands do big business here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And in Europe, there will be Fiat and Peugeot. Hmm. Everything else is a subordinate brand, and they're going to get like leftover product or product based on stuff that was developed for the core brands. Now, there is a shareholder meeting coming up in a couple of weeks where we're promised there will be some clarification of this, but I would not be surprised to see some brands go away soon.
If I understand, because I've been doing a little bit of reading on this since you brought it to our attention, it's not so much that, for example, the Stellantis, Dodge, Ram, Chrysler, they're not going to get less money. It's that they're allocating the money differently. They're prioritizing where the money is going. So, for example, again, if I understand correctly, Chrysler will still get some money, but it's like, okay, here's the 25 cents that's left in the bottom of the jar.
Yeah, it is like that. There will no longer be product developed specifically for Chrysler or Dodge moving forward. They will get derivative products. So we'll see where this goes, but I don't see this lasting very long. And Dodge, in my opinion, is a broken brand anyway. The folks at Fiat Chrysler spent so much time and effort making it the Hemi brand, you know, and the Chargers and Challengers. And all that was great, and it was fun to watch. But ultimately, it doesn't do a lot for a brand if you're trying to sell something like a compact or midsize crossover, which, by the way, they could not do. Dodge tried to sell something called a Hornet for a couple of years, and they couldn't give it away.
I never understood the separation of Ram from Dodge. Because for so many years, Dodge was associated with Ram. And I didn't understand that marketing thing.
And was it the Ram truck the biggest selling truck at that time?
Yeah.
It was especially weird because Chevy never saw the need to do that. Mm-hmm. And Ford never saw the need to do that. Both of those brands sell a lot of pickup trucks and some medium-duty trucks as well without feeling the need to differentiate.
Well, We will follow this. How important, I'm segueing here, but speaking of big honking trucks and sport utilities, how important is TV presence? And here's where I'm going with this. A show that we watch on Sunday nights is Tracker. On Tracker, the hero drives a big honking GMC.
And they don't blur out the GMC as they do on some shows.
It is almost kind of as much of a character as Kit was on the what was the name
Knight
of
Knight Rider.
Knight Rider.
Mm-hmm. Because the Tracker is driving all over the country in his GMC truck.
And over the past month or so, I've noticed that GMC is now running ads for what is apparently the exact model that he is driving. And I'm wondering if that's because there was so much interest in this. So I guess my question is, how important is product placement these days?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't watch a lot of broadcast TV anymore, but it seems like it matters a lot, even going way back, right? We know that in the late 50s, there was a Jeep called the Maverick Jeep, which was advertised during the TV show Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I'm trying to think of the name of that cop show that was set in Texas. With the action hero. It featured Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yes.
Exactly.
And that made big use. They prominently figured the Ram pickup in that. That would have been a Dodge Ram at the time. But they really made use of that. So I think it does play. I don't know how much. I don't know how you measure the impact of that. But ultimately, I think it's cool to see what you own on TV doing cool things.
Yeah. And then if you have somebody like the dude that drives the Tracker vehicle, he comes with the truck. That's even better.
The blatant plug light just started flashing. We mentioned that you are the publisher of Consumer Guide. So tell us about this Consumer Guide thing, and what is it, and why should we care, and where do we find out about it?
Yeah, most importantly, what we do is our annual Best Buy picks. So if you're shopping for a new car, just go to consumerguide.com. Check out our Best Buys. That's a really good place to start your test driving list. We've narrowed it down for you. Obviously, my long-form reviews are there, and I review 50 or 60 cars a year, so I cover virtually everything. And you can listen to our podcast right there on the homepage. That's the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, but you really should subscribe.
And the award-winning Consumer Guide Cars of it.
Yes, what was the right. Thank you.
What was the last award? It was like the highest-rated podcast
for cars
in the universe or something.
we got an award from the Texas Auto Writers Association, best single episode of a podcast.
And on Consumer Guide, you can find the Daily Drive blog, information about auto shows, shopping tips and reviews. And
occasionally a little bit of retro news, speaking of older television shows and cars, right, Tom?
Yeah, I recently did something on the 1983 Chrysler Fifth Avenue, and it was kind of a last gasp for big rear-wheel drive cars. So there's an advertisement that makes me laugh because the car was kind of sad in a lot of ways, but it really was the last one. And what was weird, if people remember the Fifth Avenue, vinyl roof, wire wheel covers. And the thing about it was, it turned out to be an accidental hit. Like, there was an audience for this that was really going to miss these cars, and they bought in.
Didn't they frequently have like a bustle on the back? That hideous...
Yep.
Hideous.
Well, now
look.
That was the back in the days
kit.
Of the
Continental.
The Continental kit, and that was back in the days of the Frank Sinatra model. I'm confusing that with Imperial.
The Imperial had the Frank Sinatra edition, which came with 8-track tapes of Frank singing.
Of course it did.
And the Imperial's color was the same blue as old Blue Eyes. Blue Eyes.
Oh, jeez.
It really was.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah,
that was a great looking car.
I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah.
I know a great looking car. We're going to take a break. We're talking cars. Tom Appel joins us a couple times a month to catch us up on car news. And there's a whole lot more coming your way here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking all things automotive with Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide. And tonight's Tom's cartoons theme is Party Time with Mark Knopfler. And what was that, Tom?
That was a song called Do America off Mark's 2000 album, Sailing to Philadelphia.
I like that.
I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. But then I like just about everything Mark Knopfler does. And to me, Mark Knopfler is a classic example of how some people say, because Mark plays Fender guitars, some people say, okay, a Fender guitar has a Fender guitar sound. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Mark Knopfler's sound is different.
Agreed.
He just tweaks it just enough, and he has such a distinctive sound.
Mm-hmm.
I love him. Text at 312-981-7200. Please ask Tom if recent stories of GM bringing back the Camaro have any basis in reality, and that's from Bob in Arlington Heights. Camaro, a hallowed name in General Motors history, and rumors that maybe it's coming back, true, false, what do you know?
They are true, and it's great news, and there's an interesting story there. The next generation of the Cadillac CT5, which will be Cadillac's only car, the CT4, which is a small car, is going away. The CT5 is going to be based on new architecture that will be shared with Buick and Chevy. Buick is going to get a sedan of some sort, and Chevy is going to do whatever they do with it, but there have been some sightings of test cars running around that suggest it will be very much a traditional Camaro, which would be a small sports coupe. Let's hope it is, but it could be something else. That might be a sedan. It would be a very sporty sedan, but we'll see where this goes.
Well, I like that.
Did I come across a story about the Rivian? I think last week they were reporting that they are delaying the arrival of their SUV that's supposed to be under $50,000?
They are delaying the cheap version of it. So what's happening is, for people who don't know, Rivian's been selling basically the same two vehicles, the R1 pickup and the RS sport utility vehicle. Very well reviewed. They have not sold especially well, and they're losing an awful lot of money on each one. So they really need to get the volume set up. And the R2 is a new compact size vehicle, like around the size of a Honda CR-V, something like that, due out soon. And originally they had talked about prices as low as $45,000. But the initial version, which we're going to see promised hopefully soon in the next 60 days or so, is going to start closer to 60 grand. So they're going to start with the loaded stuff first. We won't see the cheap version this year.
What have you been driving lately?
Oh man, I just I'm a little weepy-eyed. I'm a little bit teary.
You got to give it up.
No, not that, but that too. My review is up right now. I just finished it, of the Lexus LS, and that is Lexus's big car. And the story here is a bit sad. I drove a 2025 edition of the car. There is a 2026, but they're only going to build 250 of them, and then it goes away.
What? 250?
250, that's it. Yeah, it's the Heritage Edition of the Lexus LS. And for people who don't know or don't remember, the LS is the car that launched Lexus back in 1989. And it was phenomenal, and it scared Mercedes-Benz, and it was this beautiful, well-crafted, large, affordable luxury sedan that changed everything and defined what Lexus is. But no one buys big sedans anymore, especially big luxury sedans. So Lexus is killing this car. Yeah, if you want one, you want to get one soon.
I'm just reading a little bit of your review, and you say there's nothing wrong with the car. Well, maybe a couple of things. The problem is society.
Yes.
Wow.
But, Steve, you and I had this conversation the other night. We were watching something, and there were no less than three commercials for three different auto manufacturers, and they were all advertising sedans.
Yeah.
And I said, wait, I thought we've been talking about the fact that nobody's buying sedans. So what's that all about?
What's sort of happening here, and it's sort of interesting because now we're hearing Buick talk about a sedan, which they might put into fleet. I mean, we don't really know what the plan is there. But the affordability has become an issue, and you can build a sedan and you can sell a sedan for 15, even 20% less than a like-size crossover. So if we were going into a long-term period of financial distress for car buyers, it might make sense that buyers start to back off a little bit of their expectations and they start buying sedans again. And of course, the Camry, the Toyota Camry, never stops selling well.
Right.
Right.
The Honda Accord still sells pretty well, and Nissan is still selling the Altima. So this is an option for people, but I think those options need to look just a little bit more appealing, and Toyota's is hybrid only, and they do a premium version that's very luxurious. So the world is changing a little bit. I don't know if we're going to see this big migration back to cars, but there will be at least be a minor movement.
Is there any less of a tariff impact on parts when it comes to sedans?
That's a good question. There are fewer parts, right? Because most of them aren't all-wheel drive. And a lot of that all-wheel drive stuff does cross the Mexican border, although that's mostly trucks. I'm trying to think now. All of the sedans we just mentioned are all built here in the U.S., the Accord, the Camry, and the Altima.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't be subject to much unless their engines are coming in from someplace. But I think those are all built here, too.
But even
they might be able to build those a little bit more affordably.
But even if they're built here, aren't there some of the component parts or the computer parts that chips that come from
China, Asia,
China or wherever?
Mm-hmm.
Depends on the car. A lot of them aren't Chinese, but a lot of them are coming over from Japan still. And Japanese makers have gotten very good at sourcing their stuff, and we used to call it just in time, but they came from all over the globe. And that's a bit of a hiccup now because you don't want to bring in parts from Japan if you don't have to, because you're going to be paying that big tariff. Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of parts, we're going to take a break and come back, and let's spend a few minutes and talk about what was a front page story in the Sun-Times last week.
Oh, yeah.
All about the airbags. And for people who are listening, if you've had your airbag stolen from your vehicle, you might find that your car is going to sit at the dealership or at the body shop for weeks, maybe months, because they can't get the airbags. So there's quite a bit going on here in Chicago when it comes to that world of airbags. More coming up with Tom Appel after this on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking all things automotive with Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide. And tonight's Tom's Cartoons theme is Party Time with Mark Knopfler. And what was that, Tom?
That was Donegan's Gone from the album Shangri-La back in 2004.
I just, as that was playing, and I love it, I just realized you need to add one other thing to the Consumer Guide website.
Mm-hmm.
You need to add a tab that would have links to all of Tom's cartoons.
Yes.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yes.
Because we get people asking, well, where is that work? And mm-hmm. you could just...
Last time Tom was on, good example, the CD that Tom brought to our house and left for us, we played it. People said, oh my gosh, I never heard of that woman. That's great. And I have a feeling she's kind of freaking out because she's getting orders.
Yeah.
Like, where did this come from?
I hope so. I hope this worked out well for her.
But you could do what we've done sometimes, just find the YouTube video link to some of the songs and just put them up in a tab on the mm-hmm. Consumer Guide website.
Well, that's a great idea. Yeah, and the Mark Knopfler stuff, all readily available on mm-hmm. LP as well. He's big into vinyl.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we were talking about a shortage of parts. NHTSA says that it's been almost 10 years that they've been talking about the theft of catalytic converters.
Yeah.
But this year, it looks like they're reporting that airbags are beating out catalytic converters. So what
particularly
happens
in the Chicago
area. Yeah. And apparently, when your airbag is stolen, you might find that it's going to take you literally weeks, if not months, to get a replacement airbag. And the Sun-Times went into like a three-page spread on the theft of airbags in Chicago. And one of the things that was really disturbing is the number of auto body shops that are buying these stolen airbags.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I was wondering, is an airbag numbered like an engine is on a car so that you would know where it goes?
Where it came from?
Where it came from?
No, and that's the tragedy of this situation. There's individual serial numbers on the airbags, but they don't match anything on the car. There is no database. There is no link. So if you have used airbags laying around your shop, there's really no proof of where those came from, unfortunately. Mm. So there isn't a lot here to stop the thefts, as it were. And it was a couple of years ago, there was another big recall that involved the Honda Civic mm-hmm. and the related Acura Integra, creating this big demand for the airbags. And as we know, the industry is very slow to replace these because they don't want, you know, to set up additional production for, mm-hmm. you know, what are relatively low numbers relative to new car airbag production. So there's this horrible wait. If your airbag is stolen, you might be waiting for weeks until you get one. And it's a big pain. And obviously, it's very expensive mm-hmm. to replace as well.
Well, I would have two comments, one a question. One, I would be so hesitant, not only hesitant, I would never want to buy a used or a black market airbag.
No.
eBay.
What if the darn thing doesn't work?
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, what can people do to protect their steering wheels from people steering? Or is it just get those those clubs and put them on your steering wheel? Or what do you do?
Actually, the club is like the best suggestion because they're not that expensive and they don't do any damage to anything, but they do rust across the center of the steering wheel, making it very difficult to remove an airbag. And because the people who do this are very good at it,
yeah.
and they can do it very quickly, if they see a club, they're just going to move on. Like, they're not going to bother with that.
I was stunned that I can't even imagine that you can remove an airbag in a minute.
Literally.
A minute. So the hardest thing is breaking the window to get into the car. Once you're in there, you could steal it in a minute. So if you've got a club, apparently Chicago police are reporting that the bad guys are now equipped with cutters so they can just cut the club off, which is really infuriating because that was one of the things that was protecting your car. You park on the street, you look out the window, you see there's glass in the street. Oh, I wonder what happened. Oh, that's my window was broken. Now my airbag is gone. I mean, I would imagine that there are departments within the Chicago Police Department going to auto body shops to see if they've got these stolen airbags. But what do they do if they find? How do they prove it?
There is no way, like with catalytic converters, police departments were doing numbering things where they different
spray
communities
painting
were doing. You can't do that with an airbag.
No, the best that they can do, and I read this someplace, was that Chicago police can ask for a chain of custody. So what they're looking for is a paper trail. So if they think that your shop is involved in the remarketing of stolen airbags, mm-hmm. they're going to want receipts. Like, where did you get this? Where did it come from? Something like that. And I suppose if there's enough incidents, I mean, it's a hard thing to prosecute, I think. But if there's enough incidents, I think you can get yourself into some pretty serious trouble.
The Sun-Times interviewed a Honda spokesperson, Lynn Seeley. So why not just make it harder for thieves to remove an airbag from the steering wheel? And Lynn said, as with any vehicle or valuable component theft, determined thieves are often willing to damage a vehicle to accomplish their criminal goals, and thus hardening a component against theft may inadvertently increase the amount of damage to the car. I kind of understand that. It's easy enough now that they just get in and out.
But I would wonder, too, if the whole purpose of an airbag is, okay, accident, this thing needs to pop out now. So if you do something to inhibit that thing, the airbag coming out, is that potentially going to diminish the effectiveness of the airbag?
Yeah, and the lid, the actual vinyl in the steering wheel, just flips open, mm-hmm. right, in the event of an accident. It just pops open. So there's no protection of the airbag from the surface, from the top. And that's by design. It's supposed to pop open, and the airbag is supposed to flow freely out. But once you've got that open, you have pretty easy access to whatever anchors the airbag into the wheel itself.
In some cases, just a couple of screws.
Yeah.
Just a couple of screws, and the right tool, you slip it in the side, and pop, it's right there in your hand. and you're gone.
Okay, this may not apply, but my pea-sized brain has gone in this direction for a second. Are all airbags the same? By that I mean, is the airbag that is on the passenger side of the dash the same kind of airbag as the airbag that is in the middle of the steering wheel?
No, those are very different, actually. The bag on the right in front of the passenger is more square-shaped. It's almost like the shape of a pillow, rectangular, whereas the one in the steering wheel is very much round. So they are very different. And then you've got the ones that no one ever touches. You've got side impact protection.
Right.
We used to have seat side airbags and curtain side airbags.
And airbags.
Those are more difficult to remove.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And I think originally when the story broke earlier this year, they were talking about Hyundai and Kia were the targeted vehicles. But it sounds like all of them are potentially targets. If you've got an airbag in your car, why wouldn't they all be?
And wasn't enticing? Toyota one of the brands that was being targeted most recently?
In Chicago, yeah.
Yeah, one of the things happening with Hyundai Kia, too, is that the Hyundai Tucson and the Kia Sportage, mechanically very similar. I'm pretty sure those airbags are interchangeable. So all of a sudden, you've got twice the audience for
those. Oh, sure. Well, and very popular vehicles, too.
Yeah, very popular vehicles. Yeah.
I haven't looked into this, but are there any statistics on what is the difference in the cost of a new airbag as opposed to the cost of a black market airbag? How much?
I saw some numbers today, and used ones can go for as little as $300, $600. Mm-hmm. New ones are $1,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can even see them on eBay for a lot less than that, like $250 on eBay. Why in God's name would you say, yeah, I'll take two?
Yeah, wouldn't do that.
No. A listener, I don't want to know how he knows this, but from 630 area code, he says you can cut the steering wheel very quick and you can remove the club just like 1, 2, 3. It's gone.
Great.
Yeah, really.
Oh, boy.
Tom, this hour is rapidly melting away. Can we get you to hang around and we can talk about some recalls, because there are some
big
recalls, and tie up some loose ends here, because there was a lot of car news this week. And
sure.
Tom joins us a couple times a month. Listener says, repeat one more time, the vehicle that you are road testing just now giving up, that's the Lexus?
Oh, it's the Lexus LS, and specifically the LS500. There was a hybrid version that's gone for 2025 and 2026, so it's just the turbo V6 moving on.
And an 872 area code said, back to an earlier conversation we had, Lee Iacocca wanted to kill the Fifth Avenue after 1984, but with a profit of $5,000 on each of them, the car soldiered on until 1989.
And am I wrong, or were those Fifth Avenues still sort of a derivative from the K cars?
Oh, they were not K car, but they go way, way back, and they were actually related to things like the Dodge Dart and the Plymouth Valiant. They were updates of that, but they still had leaf spring rear suspensions and torsion front bar suspensions. I mean, they were antiques by the time they finally retired them.
Speaking of antiques, more with Tom coming up.
Oh, that's right. Sweet talking, Steve.
After we break for the news, stay with us at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love this. Tom's cartoons theme tonight has been Party Time with Mark Knopfler, and I had to dig this up. That's Chet Atkins and Mark Knopfler, from an album that belongs in everybody's collection, mm-hmm. and that's called Poor Boy Blues. It is so
There's
cool.
an official video to that. You can see it on YouTube. It's very entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had fun with that. And
also,
if you do some searches on YouTube, you can find there is one. Oh, and I'm trying to think of where the heck it was. It was an acoustic evening with Chet Atkins and Mark Knopfler. And just some wonderful live in-concert videos with the two of them. Really, really good stuff.
Well, we held Tom over because we got some more car stuff to talk about. Tom, I came across a story last week from Carfax. They were writing about unfixed backup camera recalls. And we know, because we've talked about them over the years, that the National Highway Safety Traffic Safety Administration has been talking about recalls for backup cameras and how it's important to get them fixed because of the number of, for example, children that are there and you don't see them. They came out with the cities that have not responded to the recalls. Now, get a load of this. There are 7 million vehicles on U.S. roads today that have not had their backup cameras fixed.
7 million.
They've received a recall notice, but they just haven't gotten it fixed. New York is number one. Atlanta, Los Angeles. Chicago has 227,000 cars that have recalls that they've not got fixed. 227,000.
It's such a hassle, too, for manufacturers, because if it is an official recall, if it's an official, you know, government mandated or government suggested recall, it is incumbent on the manufacturer to get those things fixed, and they have targets. And Jeep famously didn't get their numbers done on one particular recall and was heavily, heavily penalized for not getting the recalls done. These were older versions of the Grand Cherokee. It was a suspension issue. It was a serious deal, but they didn't get people in to fix them.
Wow. And I guess maybe it's just a time issue, thinking, well, I don't want to give up my car for how long it's going to take you to fix it, because it's not like a computer update, right? They have to do something manual.
You know what else happens, too, and it's interesting. When a vehicle is older, it is less likely to go through a dealership when it's traded, second or third generation of a car. A dealership has to make sure that the recalls have been performed before they resell a vehicle. So that sort of makes sure that first generation or second generation ownership vehicles are fixed. But later than that, private party sales, no one's checking.
Interesting. Yeah. So what other recalls have you come across this week?
I just found one, and it's a little bit amusing. And then this is being reported right now by Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk on Facebook. But Ram Trucks is recalling 12,000 of its heavy-duty pickups. That would be the 2,500 and 3,500. Because they can drive too fast.
What? What?
Excuse me?
Apparently, the engine control unit is supposed to regulate speed based on the tires on the vehicle.
Yeah.
And it's not doing it. So these vehicles are, it would be overstating things to say they're out of control, but people who are not paying attention might be driving these cars too fast.
And the officer is not going to buy it when you say, but officer, it's got a mind of its own.
No. So these, it's 2023 through 2026. Okay, mostly Ram 2500, so they're 3/4-ton trucks. And I don't know when word's going out.
Doesn't that present an interesting insurance issue if you were, in fact, driving the vehicle too fast? And if the tires were the problem and something happened where the vehicle became unstable, who would be, granted, you'd be at fault for driving the vehicle fast, but if a different tire would have enabled that vehicle not to tip over at that speed, who would then also be liable?
I don't know. It's a good question, but it does sound like the manufacturer is going to get pulled into it.
Well, I have a Ford recall, nearly 180,000 Rangers and Broncos for loose front seat belt bolts. Now that to me, that's a serious recall.
Yeah.
It's a loose front
deal.
Yeah, a seat bolt, and over 61,000 Jeep Cherokee SUVs for power transfer unit failures. What does that mean, power transfer unit failures?
That is probably something to do with the transfer case. In a vehicle with a front engine and rear drive sort of default system, the transfer case gets powered back to the front axle.
So that's
those have been problematic. There's actually another recall here right about that same thing.
That's a serious one, too. Hyundai Genesis, certain Ioniq 6, Santa Fe, and G90 models are being recalled due to detaching seatbelt anchors. Again, that gets my attention. Yep. And then they tell me I'll get my letter 2 months down the road. I'm like, really? I gotta wait? So.
Yeah.
By the way, that, not a recall, but just something that I saw in one of the automotive groups that I follow. The person was posting and saying that they were really surprised. They have a newer vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
They were driving through, I don't know if they were getting a hamburger or whatever it was. They're driving.
Oh, yeah.
The vehicle is moving, not at a fast speed, but they, as they're driving at this not fast speed, they opened their door.
Oh, they come from the car wash and they didn't want to smear up the window by lowering the window.
That's right. And opening the door, the vehicle slammed on the brakes.
It stopped.
Immediately.
Yeah.
They didn't realize that with a lot of newer vehicles, that merely opening the door means, nope.
When the engine is on.
We're stopping.
Yeah.
And it has to do with the, with a lot of newer vehicles, the gear selector is either, okay, you're either in drive or reverse or park.
Mm-hmm.
And if you open a door, the vehicle goes into park, period, end of story. Am I pretty correct on that, Tom?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because there's a couple of things that systems like this are supposed to do. But one of them is to prevent you from opening a door into traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So what's probably happening here, at least in the drive-through, is that the sensors sense the wall. And they don't care if it's a wall or not. They think it's just something there. So it does not want to open the door. And it doesn't want you to keep going if they think there's a crash imminent. So it probably crossed up the system a little bit, and it defaulted what it thought was the absolute safest thing to do.
But isn't this a case with most newer vehicles? Because if you're driving an older vehicle, I'll use, for example, our 2005 Cadillac, we could drive it at a slow speed and open the door and, mm-hmm. and you know, do whatever we wanted to do, and it wouldn't be a big deal. But new car, no. Door yeah. open, car stops, now.
And I got the impression that the guy had never read that in his manual,
yeah.
so it was pretty startling to have the car stop hard.
And I would imagine a lot of people listening to us right now, if they have a newer car, they don't realize that, yeah, that's going to happen. You do not open the door while the vehicle is in any speed of motion.
I just had a flashback. I was in the back seat of the car. My Uncle Frank was driving. My cousin Cindy was next to me. We were in the Ozark Mountains. We're driving like 60 miles an hour. And he just casually says, wow, I wonder what that was in the road. And my cousin Cindy, at 14 years old, he's driving 70 miles an hour, 60, 70. She opens the car to lean out to see what was in the road. And I grab her by grabbed her by the back of her shirt and pulled her back in. And as I did, she's pulling the door closed. We all aged. We were like,
yeah.
And I thought, you know, if he could get out of the car right now, capital punishment
yeah.
was demanded at
oh,
that
boy.
Point. Oh, my gosh. For the next 45 minutes, we had to hear him railing about, you never open a car door when a car is running.
I don't blame him.
It was terrifying. It really was. And I guess we've come full circle. We started out with the terrifying Waymo cars
yes.
that are taking
right.
over the cul-de-sac.
So we have bookended with terror.
Terror, yes.
The automotive world of horrors.
That's right. Well, Tom, thank you. And what are you in next week? What are you going to be driving next week?
I have the Infiniti QX80 Sport. That's
ooh.
Infiniti's really big body up frame SUV. It's their answer, basically, to the Escalade.
Ooh, nice.
So big honking.
Yep. Yeah. So what's your gas mileage going to be on that
three?
Baby?
Yes. You know, it now uses a 9-speed automatic and a turbocharged V6, and it's not as dreadful as you would think.
Boy, there's the review. It's not as dreadful as you would think.
Yes.
When I started at Consumer Guide, we had a Navigator, a long-term Navigator, that mm-hmm. averaged about 10 miles per gallon.
Sure.
Now vehicles of that size, they're more like 16 miles to gallon.
Yeah.
That is huge, huge growth. That is so much better.
Yeah.
Well, if people want to check out Consumer Guide or you, or how do they do all that?
Yeah, just check us out at consumerguide.com. I'm also on Blue Sky, where there's great conversations. So Car Guy Tom on Blue Sky, if you want to chime in.
And where do they find the podcast?
Any place. The Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast is available for download anywhere.
Anywhere you listen to your podcast.
Yep.
Great. Thanks a lot for your time tonight, Tom. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks
Talk
so
to
much.
You in a couple weeks.
Sounds good.
More coming up at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. And ladies and gentlemen, you're entering the mind of our producer, Ashley Byhun.
What the heck is this?
Okay, I can explain.
Please.
So,
yes.
In the break, Steve says, dealer's choice, what do you want to play? And I was like, I don't know. But do you guys, when you listen to music, do you use Spotify at all? Or do you guys, are you Apple Music people? Are you YouTube
Spotify,
people?
Spotify, YouTube.
Yeah.
YouTube so, more often.
Spotify just released this. They do those Spotify raps where people, it tells you at the end of the year what you listen to for the
right.
year. So they just released this new thing. It's your all-time top songs. And that is called Remy Drives Linguini. And it's a song from the movie Ratatouille. And that is my number one
what?
Song on this playlist.
That's
at
your...
407 listens.
You're so kidding.
That is... Wow. That is the little inside scoop of my mind.
See,
it, enter
it
my
truly
mind.
Is, yes.
Wow. So what about that song speaks to you?
I have no idea. I actually bought that song on iTunes when I used to buy songs on iTunes back before Spotify was a thing. I love that movie. That is just a great
yeah.
Disney Pixar movie. And for some reason, that song really just... It's like my cleaning song. It's my background noise song. When I was in school, that was my studying song.
To me, that's kind of an interesting mix of cute and slightly funky.
Well, the harmonica, when it comes in, you're like, oh, okay.
It's super catchy. Have you guys seen the movie?
100 years ago when it first came out.
It's just such a cute movie.
It is.
It's the scene when Remy, the rat, is teaching Linguini how to cook by pulling on his hair. So it's like the montage scene of them like attempting to figure out how to make this thing work so that he can cook all this food to impress the boss. But I laughed so hard when that is my top played song.
Well, what are some of the others right behind that? The Ratatouille.
Let me see. That's a great.
Yeah,
What
are your top 10?
What do I what?
What are your top 10?
Yeah. Oh, my top 10. So Your Smiling Face, James Taylor's number 2.
Really? Okay.
Scotty Doesn't Know by Lustra. It's kind of a punk rock song. Amy, Pure Prairie League.
Really?
A song called 330 by a random band called 890. They came on my college radio station.
Okay.
First Date, Blink-182.
Oh, that's good.
Mm. The End, Games We Play. That's another like pop punky song. This song, I don't even remember listening to it that much, called Make Me Feel. It's kind of like an EDM-y song. I have no idea. Crash Into Me, Dave Matthews Band.
Oh, my gosh.
Can't Fight This Feeling, REO Speedwagon.
Wow.
That's
a 10.
Wonderfully eclectic mix. I love that.
I am.
But number one, that one wins the prize.
That's fun.
Yeah. I laughed so hard. I was like, yeah, this tracks a random song from the soundtrack.
You could study to that song, too.
Yeah.
I listen to it
all the time. It's one of those.
Wow.
So that one wasn't really a shock to me, but it was funny to see it.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And then the rest of them kind of are a little bit more normal, but...
So send me a link to that. I want to listen to that more.
It's one of those where it's kind of, it like tickles your ear a little bit.
Yeah. Well, can you whistle?
No, I can't.
I can't either.
No.
And Steve can whistle. Yeah.
I wish.
He's annoying because he...
I can't do anything cool like that.
I don't whistle as well as I used to. My
dad. Oh, my gosh.
He was scary. He did this thing. I can't do it. But he did this thing where he would put like 2 fingers in his mouth and whistle, and you could hear it at the Wrigley Building.
But he could whistle in 2 parts. He could whistle songs.
Yeah.
Where he would be whistling high and low.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow.
I don't understand.
Could he like beatbox? Or,
probably.
You know that where
I'm sure he could have.
Which is very cool. Can you snap your fingers?
Oh yeah, that.
Well, no, a lot of people go like, oh. Can you roll your tongue?
I can. Kind of.
Let me see.
I can do the middle.
You're
doing good. I can turn it one way. I can't turn it the other way, and I can't do the W thing that some people can do.
What?
Can you tie? Can you tie a pit?
No, not from a pit.
What was it? A stem. A stem.
That's how I won, Steve.
Yeah.
We were out for drinks, and I took the cherry stem, and I put it in my mouth, and I go, look. And he went, oh, my God.
I said, yep, that's it.
I found her.
I've done it one time successfully, but I attempt every time I'm near a cherry stem, if I'm being honest.
I was on my third tequila sunrise. Yep. And I was like, just bring me some more cherry stems. I'm good. I can roll those babies.
Oh, my God.
Okay, here's one more question for you. Did you know, or one freaky thing that I learned about the human body, that you can pick up a pair of jeans and determine if they will fit you by putting them around your neck?
Yes.
What, like the waist?
The waist.
Like over your head? Or you're wrapping
you
it around your neck?
You drape them around your shoulders and you take the waist.
I'm picturing somebody with like their pants over their head. Like, nope,
yes.
These aren't going to work. Somebody walks into the dressing room.
I wonder how many people listening to us right now are going to try this.
I don't believe it, though, because I like to think I have a rather thin neck, but it doesn't match my waist.
Oh, boy.
But they say when you go into a store, you don't have to try on clothes. Just put them around your neck.
Again, as Spike Odell said for years, you don't get this kind of radio up and down the dial.
And what is it about your hands? If you hold your arms out from your middle finger to your middle finger across your back, that's your height?
Oh, I've heard that.
Yeah. And that's true.
And that's true.
Yeah. I feel like I'm tall, and I feel like my wingspan is not that long.
I know. I'm like, really? I'm only this tall? What? I even yelled at a nurse the other day. I go, no, that's wrong. I am a good inch taller than. She goes, honey, I'm looking at the numbers. And I thought, wow, I'm getting very tense.
Actually, you bring up an interesting question. Because if we shrink as we get older... Do our arms come in as we get older?
We'll be like little dinosaurs. Or Kelly Clarkson. She's very dinosaur-like with those little arms. And I love her. But when she moves, I'm like, put your arms out. Put your arms out. You look like a little dinosaur.
I'm going to interrupt this because we're about 3 hours late with the half-hour news. So let's do that, and then we'll see what happens next. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. It's Dwayne Eddy and 330 Blues. It just jumped into the jukebox in my head because Ashley, you had said something about a 330 something that was on your playlist, and I just happened to think of that. And I remember the story that Dwayne told us about that song, how that song happened. This was back in the, would have been late 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Dwayne Eddy and the Rebels were one of the first white groups to play the Apollo Theater in New York. And he came on, and they did a couple of Dwayne's hits, and it was, you know, okay applause. And he thought, okay, we got to do something to get to this audience. And he just turned and said, okay, let's do a blues thing. And that's how he created 330 Blues. And the audience went nuts for that.
Hmm. So. And it's 330 someplace or 340.
Yeah.
In fact, Lynn from South Haven, Michigan, which I believe they're an hour later than us, she's listening in tonight and sent me some odd factoids about the human body. Things that...
Okay.
You burn more calories sleeping than watching television.
See?
But what about listening to radio? You burn so many more calories listening to the radio than you do watching TV.
And if you're laying down and listening to the radio.
Yes. You're melting.
And if you're listening to a couple on the radio. Because you have to, you know, you have to, there's two voices.
We have Ashley here.
Yes.
So yeah. So you're melting. You can eat Dutch babies all day.
Yes.
Your mouth makes about 1 liter of saliva every day. Thank you, Lynn, for sending this along. The average person has 67 different kinds of bacteria living in their belly button. Ew. I laid this one on you during the break. Your tongue has a print that is individual and unique to you, just like your fingerprint. Isn't that crazy? So are we going to start licking things?
Well, as long as they don't want me to lick some sort of ink pad with my
tongue.
To get
in, yes. You go for your passport and they say, lick this.
No, thank you. No. Not doing it.
Your brother had a problem when he went for a passport because he didn't have a fingerprint.
He didn't.
And then when they brought the FBI out and they found out that he was not a criminal that had burned off his fingerprints, but it was weird, he said, because he was like, well, I didn't do anything.
Do you mean he didn't have a fingerprint?
Well, you know where you have to print when you get your passport. He didn't have one when he printed. There was nothing there.
And he didn't know why?
No.
That is weird.
And I'm trying to think of what the reason was for that.
I don't know that
he accidentally burn himself?
No.
It wasn't that?
For a while, I used to have a little bit of a problem because back when I was playing guitar more regularly, because playing guitar, you will get kind of an indentation on the end of your fingers that can sort of alter your fingerprint a little bit.
Mm, that's what you say until the authorities come out. All right, just a couple more from Lynn over in Michigan. You lose almost 9 pounds of skin cells every year. Why does not translate to the scales?
Yeah.
Why isn't it 9 pounds lighter? When you blush, your stomach turns red along with your face. How do we know this?
Next time I blush, I'm going to pull up my shirt.
What are you doing?
Not the first thing I think of when I'm blushing, but I guess now it will be.
The only part of the human body that can't heal itself is your teeth. The only part that cannot heal itself is your teeth.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. So out with them. Gone. Enough. If you can't play well, you're gone. Your brain weighs 3 pounds. I don't think everybody's brain weighs 3 pounds.
No.
There's some bad heads. your skull has 22 bones.
But I thought, doesn't your brain, what is it, it grows or it shrinks as you age?
Oh, stop.
I think it shrinks.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I've heard that.
Speaking of fingerprints, an unborn baby has fingerprints 3 months after it's conceived. What happened to your brother? We need to call him on the way home. Fingerprints. Human bones are 5 times stronger than steel. So when you break one, that's...
Wow.
Have you ever had a broken bone, Ashley?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yep. Yeah.
Collarbone and arm.
Oh, collarbone.
Collarbone.
Ouch.
Ow.
Yeah, that
Did
one
you fall was... off a bunk bed?
No, I... There was a... It's like a skateboard. It was called a ripstick.
Mm-hmm.
And it was two wheels, and you basically just swung your hips back and forth, and that's how you moved. And my brother was trying out for some travel soccer team, and I was at a baseball field with my dad and my brother. My brother's trying out. My dad's watching him try out, and I'm riding around on this ripstick. And right before it happened, I'm riding around on the ripstick, and it's not hard to do once you know how to do it, but it looks very difficult because it's kind of floppy and it's two wheels.
Yeah.
And you twist your hips. I'm not explaining it the best way possible, but as I'm doing that, I zoom past some dad that's also at the park also, and he's like, wow, you're really riding that thing.
No.
Nice work. I'm like, yeah, thanks. And as I'm saying that, I hit some of the sand from the baseball field.
Ow.
And I fell right on my hand, essentially. And the dad was like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. And I got up and I ran to my dad and I walked up to him and was like, I think I broke my arm. And I wasn't crying or anything. I think I was like in a state of shock.
Sure.
And my dad was like, yeah, shoo, shoo. And then I started to cry because I was like, I'm pretty sure I broke my hand. And my mom was coming after work or something to come find us at the park. And she walked up and I'm sobbing. And she's like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I think I broke my hand. And she went to my dad and was like, are you an idiot? Your daughter's crying and you're telling her to suck it up.
Golly. Well, I thought you were going to say that was your shoulder, but that wasn't your...
Oh, no, that was my arm. Yeah, so my collarbone, I was playing soccer and I fell.
Yeah.
That one's not as funny.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think it's funny
hurts.
That the guy was like, you're killing it. And I'm like, heck yeah. And then whew, wipe out.
I think my weirdest broken bone story, and this isn't the being knocked off a bus in London, this was years ago, living in Calumet City, going to go to the Chicago Auto Show. And I love the Chicago Auto Show. went to get a hamburger at a restaurant. Ice, slip on ice, fall. Okay, well, fine. Get up, go to the auto show, wandering around the auto show for about 3 hours, and I had to get bags and bags and bags of car brochures. Of that was just my thing.
Yeah.
Walking out of the auto show with all of these bags of brochures, and all of a sudden I start feeling, oh, my arm feels a little funny. And by the time I got back home and I realized that I had to drive with one arm, wound up in the emergency room. I had broken my elbow, but I was so focused on the auto show and carrying things, and I didn't realize, and my arm wound up in a cast for several weeks after that.
That's pretty crazy, because the elbow, you know, you're moving it.
Yeah. Well, those bags are so heavy.
Yeah.
So then he married me, so I would carry the bags.
And your point is?
Oh, my gosh. My quick shoulder story, because when I think about shoulders and shoulder bones, and we had an office over in the Tribune Tower, and they came to us and said, do you both want a desk? And we said, no, we want a couch. So one desk and a couch. We need a couch because you have meetings during the day. We need to have some place where we can lie down.
There'd be sometimes, that was back in the day when Johnny was doing traffic with Bob Collins.
Till 10.
And there would be a meeting sometimes around 11 or noon or something. So we're not going home. We're just going to crash on the couch in the office.
So there we are trying to fit on the couch side by side. And I felt that the only way I could lie on the couch next to him was to throw my arm over my head. And I went into a sound sleep. And when I woke up, I had thrown my whole shoulder out.
And she couldn't bring my arm down. So we walk out of the office, and Johnny's.
I said, we have to go to Northwestern because my shoulder is
Somebody's
out.
Somebody's like, you don't have to raise your hand, Johnny. It's okay. What do you need? You're like, no, I can't put my hand.
When you go in and you say, I think I've thrown my shoulder out. How'd you do that? Well, we were lying on a couch together, and I had my hand over my head for 2 hours, and I didn't move because I was exhausted. So I didn't move with my arm up there, and it just slipped right out of place. And what they do is they just take your hand, and they just shake it.
Yeah.
And it goes, and it pops big, and you go, whew.
Yeah, you get, like, a sharp pain for, like, a second.
And
then it's so the lights are starting to flicker, that's Big Plug Bob on his Zamboni.
He'll roll right over you,
getting
too.
Getting ready to clean the studios. Mm-hmm. So that means it's time for our last call.
Mm-hmm.
So if you would like to be our last caller, and win some prizes from the prize closet.
As we always say, you don't have to have anything pithy, that's with a T-H-Y, to say. You can just tell us what's happening in your world. Maybe you've got a comment on something that happened on the show tonight. Maybe you had to eat. You want to tell us what you had to eat, because we talked about...
Did you have to go for a corned beef?
We talked corned beef and ribs and coleslaw and French fries.
And Dutch babies and...
And George wants to know what we're having when we get home tonight. I don't know.
But if you would like to be our last caller, as long as you haven't won anything from this here radio station in the last 60 days or 2 months, whichever comes first, 312-981-7200. That number again is 312-981-7200. And you can maybe win something from this here radio place.
Yes, and we will wrap all this up right after this on WGN.
Closing time.
Let's go.
Yeah, you really kind of do.
Nope. Boy, this show's gone by fast.
It has. And you can't hear the rest of that song, because if you ever hear the rest of that song, it'll be our last show.
It'll be our swan song.
But that is Red Peters, the closing song. If you would like to hear why we don't play all of that song, you can go to YouTube and look up Red Peters, the closing song. We should mention, before we completely run out of time, next week we have a full show.
Is it full?
And it's a full show. Mm-hmm. And we've been talking about the Indy 500. I love the Indy 500. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that this year radio station is carrying the Indy 500. Next week, we will be talking with Dane Neal from the Indy 500 from Indianapolis. And I'm all over that.
Can I quickly insert that time trials were canceled on Saturday because of rain. They will be run on Sunday at 11. So right. The end of Wendy's show will be the time trials, or actually cutting off the end of her show.
Also, because May is Celiac Awareness Month, you will have another recipe. And next week, We're going to be talking with Joanna Van Dorf. She is the owner of the Deflowered Bakery.
Up in Andersonville.
Yeah.
10-year anniversary for them.
And we will attack the demons of cyberspace with Dr. Patrick Crispin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's coming up next week. Full show. Full 5-hour show. We start at 9 o'clock. But now we got to get to our last caller.
Right. And we were a power trio tonight. So I'm saying number 3 will be our last caller this evening.
And number 3 would be Fran. Hi, Fran. Where are you calling from?
Chicago.
Hey, Fran. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great.
Good.
God, I can't believe this.
Yes, it's you. Hey, we've been talking about food so much tonight. Did you have to wander to the kitchen and have a little something-something?
Yeah, no, I don't want to cook today. This is my day off.
Well, you don't have to cook. There's got to be something in there that you can tie on.
Yeah, like, a little ice cream, maybe that's about it.
Okay. Yeah, that all sounds right. good, too.
What's your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Oh, you know what he just...
Palmer House Rainbow Sherbert's Palmer House ice cream. I like that flavor.
I do, too.
Yeah.
And that's a weird one, too. It's kind of like Spumoni. People go, ew. I go, no.
Yeah. It's better than Spumoni, though.
Can I just, as an aside, if you're at the grocery store and you see the Yasso, Y-A-S-S-O yogurt bars, get your the pistachio ones. Oh,
you have become addicted to those.
Oh, I like those bars. I've never seen that flavor.
100 calories for just heaven on a stick. I'm not kidding.
So are you normally up at this hour of the morning?
Yeah, I'm a night person.
Good. Yeah, you're wide awake.
I've been listening to you for a long time. Really never called the station, never got through.
Really? In what part of the world are you in?
Well, I live in Chicago.
Yay! Somebody's listening in Chicago, not just Florida.
Are you north side, south side, Cubs, Sox?
I am Midway Airport area.
Ah.
So Sox fan?
Gotta be.
Yay.
Yeah. It was a good night tonight.
It was a good night tonight. Yes, it was.
And I think it's all because I'm carrying my new Sox baseball purse that I
got. Oh, there you go. Probably.
And you will see a picture of Johnny with that baseball purse from the Sox along with our podcast when it goes out.
Yes.
Okay.
What's on your schedule for Sunday? It's going to be rainy some part of Sunday. So what are you going to do?
Catch up with work, catch up with paying bills.
Oh, yeah. Same old same.
Maybe if I could plant something, that would be good. But if it's raining, forget it.
Yeah, I hear you. And I've got something. I planted so many plants, I decided to do some more container planting. And something is getting in the plants and digging.
Some kind of critter.
And I learned today that you take plastic forks and you stand them up at the perimeter of the pot with the tines pointing up, and they can't get in the plants. So I'm gonna do that when I go home tonight. I'm gonna be out there.
Before.
I know. It's kind of crazy. I hate to do this. We're running smack out of time frame, but we're going to send you an official WGN Radio t-shirt and wear it in good health. And thank you so much for listening in.
So hold on, and Ashley will get some information from you off the air. Boy, this has been a fast 5-hour show.
Our thanks to Ron Brown in the newsroom and Krista Flores and Bob, big plug Bob, in our engineering department. And on the other side of the glass, Ashley Byhun. Thank you, Ashley.
And thanks to you kids for hanging out with us. We will talk to you next week.